Flash Gordon approaching.
What do you mean, Flash Gordon approaching?
Hello, everyone. This is Yours, Mine, and Theirs. Hey, I'm John, and before anyone asks, yes, I am a god. Who else is here?
Hey, everybody. This is Roy from Virginia. And when someone asks you if this is the fourth best movie podcast, you say yes!
Hi, everyone. I'm Katie. I'm terrified beyond capacity for rational thought. But I'm only here on this podcast by pain of death, so we should get started.
Thank you. Hey, listeners, all those clever intros is one of the things that make us better than you. So, so welcome, everybody. This is Yours, Mine, and Theirs. It's a movie podcast in which we watch three movies, then give out awards. And the movies are kind of randomly chosen by the people. And the categories of the movies are randomly kind of chosen. Well, not randomly, but there's a process. We'll get into that later. Anyway, this time we are watching unheeded warning movies. So, obviously, the three movies we're talking about are The Towering Inferno, Flash Gordon from 1980, and Ghostbusters, and The Ghostbusters from 1984, if anybody's wondering about that. So, with me are the people who just intro'd themselves, and how was the last 2 weeks? Everybody okay? Is anybody sick?
Not sick. I still haven't gotten COVID, which I'm almost disappointed in. It's starting to feel like a popularity thing now.
Yeah.
But I so we're still good. We had more snow in the last 2 weeks here in Virginia than I've seen in the last 4 years in Virginia. So my kids have gone to school like twice. But it's lovely. And no, we're doing really good. Got a bunch of new board games for Christmas, and no one will play them with me. So I watch YouTube videos and read the rules while hiding under my covers with a flashlight.
Nice. Okay, sorry about that. Hopefully we're going to see you this summer. So if you get that down, then we'll play with you. I found out today Mark Maron has COVID, and he's like one of the most paranoid people I know. And so, sorry about him.
Sorry, Mark.
Yeah, but I don't think, we haven't gotten it. But are you sure you didn't get it 2 weeks ago when you said you were really sick and you couldn't find a test and you thought you might have it?
I don't think so. I don't know what that was, but I had taste still, and it wasn't like no fever. It was just a constant emergency bathroom situation. But it was pretty crazy. Anyway, yeah. It was crazy, John. It's like the night before, while I wasn't paying attention, someone put like 40 gallons of liquid in my body.
Yeah.
And
Those stories from 2 weeks ago are some of my favorite stories. So thank
They're
you.
They're nice. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Katie, and we were just, you're over in the other room, so I don't know if you have anything else to say to me, but how's it going over there?
It's nice.
In the carpeted room. Yeah.
Oh, is it warmer in the carpeted room?
Yeah, it gets warm in here.
Okay. So can I just address one question before we get going? John, why do you hate Spider-Man so bad?
Oh, yeah, everybody keeps asking me that. I can only point to the fact that, from my Letterboxd review, a lot of people see that and they get kind of mad. I just feel like we had our multiverse Spider-Man, and it was Spider-Man.
Which you didn't like that one either, though.
I liked it. I always say I feel bad that I don't like it as much as everybody else, because it's probably my favorite Spider-Man movie, but I didn't kind of go gaga over it. Now, I think I'm kind of realizing that even though I'm really into science fiction and Star Trek and stuff like that, like multiverse stories, they just kind of don't... I don't know. I kind of feel like they're more like comedy sketches than actual stories.
Well, you might want to check out of Marvel for the next couple of years. I think it's nothing but multiverse.
Yeah, that might be a good excuse to not take Marvel as seriously as I've taken it in the last 15 years. Katie, I think you liked it, right?
I think I liked it more than you did.
Yeah.
Oh, you know how lovely it was to see, like, 45-year-old Tobey Maguire? It was nice.
Well, yeah, but, I mean,
It was fun, but I think it was just riddled with plot holes.
Yeah. Well,
like, so I just watched, like the multiverse, I guess.
Yeah, So yeah. I just barely yesterday watched The Eternals because I felt like at some point there's going to be a movie coming up where I won't know what's going on because I didn't see The Eternals. That wasn't very good. I mean,
really?
It was okay.
Yeah, it's not saw it as just bad as Thor
too, but
I feel like that's me with every Marvel movie. Even just the Spider-Man, I had to watch two Spider-Mans before seeing it so that I would understand it. And I still missed some because there's another Spider-Man movie I haven't seen.
Which one have you not seen?
I've only seen half of one Andrew Garfield one. And I didn't see the last Tobey Maguire one.
That's okay. You're missing nothing from the last Tobey Maguire one. I don't know why people hated the Andrew Garfield one so bad. The first one I thought was pretty good. To be honest, I like him as a Spider-Man. He's a little bit of a spaz, but I like his Spider-Man. But anyway,
I like Garfield as a Spider-Man. That's for sure.
I don't like Tobey Maguire.
Yes,
as anything.
I love Tobey Maguire. I love him, and I love him riding Seabiscuit horses.
Oh, that was okay.
Doesn't he always just kind of seem like someone just barely poured water on him?
Yeah. I think this was the best Spider-Man I'd seen him in.
I love Spider-Man 2, the original one with Dr. Octopus. I love that. Yeah. That's a great one. That's great. So we won't, I guess I won't push this on you. I was kind of thinking as a category, we could watch a Spider-Man No Way Home and then one each of the other Spider-Man's. It'd be a four movie thing, but it sounds like, John, that you'd hate that.
No, I mean, I wouldn't mind. Katie, you would be exempt because, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, my disliking the new Spider-Man is like kind of the biggest tragedy of 2021 because Katie hadn't seen any of the Tom Holland Spider-Man, and I was like so excited to see the new Spider-Man, and I'm like, oh, well, you haven't seen the other ones? Okay, let's watch those. And we watched those, and then we went to the theater to watch the new one, and she wound up liking it more than I did. And so that was like the big tragedy. I guess it's not so bad for you, Katie, watching that last movie, but I think kind of like you said, there was like a lot of homework involved in just going to see a movie.
A lot of homework.
Yeah.
So I think Homecoming was better than Far From Home. I liked Homecoming. I hope we get to see Michael Keaton again as the Vulture at some point, but who knows?
Yeah.
I watched them all close together. They feel like a mini series to me. Like, just all one giant movie.
Yeah, I think we're going to have the TV category coming up. Unless the voting goes crazy the next hour or so. But
yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about that.
That'll be fun.
Future business.
Yep, we'll get there. Okay, well, should we talk about the Cassandra Conundrum movies?
Yes, sir.
All of these movies, as mentioned before, they have someone warns the other people in the movie about something, and then the other people in the movie are like, forget you, and then something bad happens. And so we're going to talk about all of those. The first movie is The Towering Inferno, which is one of those classic 70s disaster movies that I've never seen all the way through, even though I've seen it playing on TBS Saturday afternoon several times, you know, just flipping through the channels. And let's see. Roy, did you say you're in charge of telling us what Towering Inferno is about?
I'm totally in charge. So you know this movie came out the same year as Earthquake with what's his head? Charlton Heston.
Ah, yes. Okay, we should have watched Earthquake.
Also a San Francisco film, so...
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, San Francisco is a good place for a movie. What's Up, Doc? Is a San Francisco film, and this movie is pretty much the same thing. But so what stands up... So this movie feels... It's a really long movie. It's like 2 hours and 40 minutes, right? And it kind of feels like made for TV a little bit, right?
Yeah.
The 70s stars have gotten together for a week special miniseries on TV. But, I mean, this is crazy. You've got Steve McQueen, Paul Newman, William Holden, Faye Dunaway, Fred Astaire, Richard Chamberlain, O.J. Simpson, Robert Vaughn, and Robert Wagner. The two Roberts. Man, this movie's got everybody in it. It's crazy.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Who's older, Steve McQueen or...
Paul Newman?
You just said his name. Paul Newman, yeah.
I think Steve McQueen's older. Is he?
I think Paul Newman's older.
like by a year or a few months or something. Because I was thinking that because I was just thinking because I Paul Newman is like this old guy, but a very good looking old guy. But then I think of Steve McQueen as a very good looking young man. But Steve McQueen kind of looks sort of at this point in his life, he lost his youthful good looks and he feels like he's in the process of getting his face punched or squished, you know. Like
Paul Newman's so 5 years older.
5 years older.
5 years older. So okay, McQueen, I must have thought years instead of okay.
So when was this movie made? 1974. Steve McQueen's only 44 years old in this movie.
He's cracked. Yeah.
Look like he's 60. Oh,
Okay. Well, I don't look as good as Steve McQueen, but Steve McQueen lost his youthful exuberance by this time, I would say.
Oh, man. So, you know who else? William Holden, who, like, we're two-thirds of the way into the movie. I'm like, why haven't I seen William Holden yet? And then I realized, oh, he's the really old guy that owns the place.
Well, wait, who is William Holden, though? Like, how do you know him?
Okay, so sure. William Holden is in Sabrina.
Is he Linus?
He's Linus.
He's Greg Kinnear in Sabrina.
He's Greg Kinnear in Sabrina, yeah. He was in Stalag 17. Sunset Boulevard. A lot of 50s and 60s movies.
Okay, yeah.
Go ahead.
You're way better at that era than I am.
Bridge on the River Kwai. He's had quite a few good movies. Anyway, all right, we're talking about Towering Inferno. So this movie is kind of confusing because it starts off in a helicopter ride in what looks like Hawaii. So Paul Newman flies his helicopter from Hawaii to San Francisco. I'm assuming he was scouting out the home that he wants to retire to, right? Because isn't that part of the plot? This is the day before his retirement or he's getting out of the business or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have this tower that... It's the biggest skyscraper in the world. Is that what the deal is? I think so.
Yeah.
Paul Newman is in charge of the electricity engineering. Is he just the architect? He's just straight up the architect, right?
He's just the architect.
Just the architect. Yeah. Okay, so this building is going to get like champagne bottled tonight and there's going to be a big party. But Steve McQueen learns quickly that maybe the electrical wiring was not up to code, which is not true because everything in this building is up to code. Paul Newman, right? So everything in this building is up to code. So maybe the villain is the code. The code sucks because the electricity stuff in this building needs to be way above code. Paul Newman's, I guess it's Duncan's son-in-law, played by Richard Chamberlain, who spent $1 million less and got substandard wiring. And so a small fire breaks out in a storage room, it looks like a storage room on the 81st floor, and it just goes unnoticed for a while. And in fact, it goes unnoticed for so long that it becomes an inferno, John.
The code is like, this little thing, like compared to the rest of the building, this is a very small fire.
It's a small fire.
That's what the code was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. So they notice the fire. The fire department shows up to fight this fire. And by the time they get there, Paul Newman, doesn't he tell Steve McQueen it's pretty much under control? Well, that was a lie because it gets way out of control. So long story short, you've got this party up on the top floor, 123rd floor, 125th. You see the floor number a ton of times. I don't remember. And he calls him and he says, there's a fire on the 81st floor. You need to get that party out of there. And Duncan says, there's no way I'm moving the party from this floor. In fact, I order you to put on your jacket and come join us at the party. So that might be one of your Cassandra moments, right? Where Paul Newman says, you got to move the party. And he says, no, I refuse to do it. But there also might be another Cassandra moment coming up, right? So that's when Steve McQueen tells Paul Newman that, did you know that we cannot reliably fight fires above the 7th floor, but you just keep building them higher anyway?
Yeah.
So maybe the real villain is skyscrapers that go above 7 floors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what if they made like just really tall floors?
like seven vaulted ceiling floors.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's kind of being up to code. Maybe that's like that's how they skirted some of these things.
Yeah. So anyway, so some of the people of the party, Robert Vaughn is like a senator, right? I think he's a senator. So, but you have Robert Wagner who's lighting his own fire with his secretary. And what they don't notice during their passionate lovemaking is that the fire is right outside their door. Like you look through their windows and it's just like, it looks like the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disneyland, right?
And yeah, doesn't at one point Robert Wagner, doesn't he like open the door and there's just all these flames and then you just close it and turns close it around it. And just like, we're going to be fine.
It's like, and I think she asks him to check and see if the fire's still there and he opens the door and says, yep, still there. So, but he decides to escape, and his brilliant plan is to run right into something on fire, after which he, like, just stumbles around in flames, and then, you know, he dies. So
he put that wet towel on his head.
Yeah, which helped, right? He put the wet towel on his head, and he's like, ooh, ooh, and she's like, is it working? Yeah, it's really working.
Would he have made it if he didn't put the wet towel on his head? Because I'm wondering if that's why he ran into everything on fire. Because
he couldn't
see. The towel
see.
Was on his head. Yeah.
I don't know, man. So poor Robert Wagner, he doesn't make it. And I'm assuming his secretary doesn't either.
No, she falls out the window.
Does she fall out the window? Yeah,
she falls out the window without her pants on.
Oh, that's right. So we have all these people on the top floor, and it's become apparent that the fire is way out of control. They've got to be evacuated. So they start coming down the normal elevators. However, one of the elevators is stopped on the 81st floor where the fire decides to get onto the elevator. And then they come back up. Like the elevator comes back up, and it's just like a bunch of dead people on fire. So they can't use those elevators anymore. So they decide to use the like the tourist elevator, the elegant elevator. I don't know what they call it.
The scenic elevator.
The scenic elevator. Yeah, it's like a glass elevator on the outside of the building that holds.
Like
12.
You can really see the fire from this elevator.
Yeah. So that elevator only makes it like halfway down the building. They have to rescue that elevator. A very daring, brave, cinematic rescue with Steve McQueen being lowered on from a helicopter on top of the elevator, and then they lower the elevator down. But then they get like this pulley system. Like if you've seen The Dark Knight, that's pretty much it, right? They got like a wire extending between these two buildings, and then they put like a little cage where they can transport one person at a time. Well, Richard Chamberlain gets sick of waiting, and he shoves everyone out of the way, and he gets on. I think, does it break off? Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he breaks it so no one else can use it.
A whole bunch of people got on it.
It's him and all the thugs he recruited. He's like, we could take over, you know, this escape.
Well, and then there was, I know it was all the people that don't like him too. So there's people like the statesman guy,
Robert
Vaughn,
senator.
He was trying to get him off.
Yeah, because they all had numbers, and he was tired of obeying the numbers, because I think they finally get the message that like, hey, the fire is going to kill you guys in 10 minutes or 15 minutes. You're out of time. And so, you know, anyway, they do come up with a brilliant plan, John. And the brilliant plan is to explode the water tanks on top of the building, and it will just fill the building with enough water to put out the fire. So everyone ties themselves down in the party room. Now, this is an interesting part, because I think there's supposed to be like 150, 200 people having a party. And so all these people tie themselves down, and they blow the tanks. And it kind of feels to me, though, that like the water maybe would just rush over the sides of the top of the building, and it would happen real fast, and then the fire would still be going. But anyway, it works. The fire gets put out. But also, I would say 90% of the people in the party room either get drowned, crushed, or swept out the windows. Like, so I think we saved a dozen lives. I don't know.
Yeah. It killed more people. It's like seatbelts. It kills more people than it saves.
But so, like, Steve McQueen at the end, he's like, we're lucky. This only killed 200 people. I'm like, okay, 200 people? Well, we saw a few people like Robert Wagner and his secretary. But when we're talking 200 people, we got to be talking about the people in the party room, right? So we're saying that most of those people didn't make it. And I'm assuming they're just all dead from being crushed by, there's so many pillars, John. There's a lot of stone columns and pillars in this party room, and they all land on someone. So anyway, so there's kind of a handshake moment at the end where Steve McQueen says, if you guys would just listen to the firefighters, there wouldn't be so many fires. And then Paul Newman says, all right, I'm asking. And Steve McQueen says, you know where to find me. And so the very next week, I'm assuming they make plans for a 7-story skyscraper. Right. Yeah.
That's Steve McQueen's big break into architecture. I wouldn't have liked it if Paul Newman actually did respond, but I did think Steve McQueen was blaming Paul Newman the whole time when Paul Newman was the one who said, you know, no, we're doing this wrong.
Yeah, so there's several problems,
right? Did Steve McQueen not know that, you know?
Yeah, he just hates, like, all architects who build above 7 floors. So I think if Steve McQueen's designing a building, it maybe is 7 floors tall, but it's, like, 20 blocks wide, right? Like, it's a skyscraper that's laying on its side. So that's what I see.
This is what Paul Newman should have done, though. He should have been like, okay, well, I get to design your next fire truck, one that goes up 120 stories. Like, I can do that. Just because you can't design a ladder that goes up 7 stories.
So who's at fault here ultimately? Do you think it's Duncan? Because Duncan was trying to cut corners to save a lot of money, right? And so he kind of winked at Chamberlain and said, hey, you know, save me some money if you can. And so everyone's mad at Chamberlain for spending $1 million less on the wiring, but he was kind of goaded into doing it. And it sounds like a lot of other corners were cut. Like, none of the sprinklers worked, right? That's one of the things. Yeah. None of the fire extinguishing sprinklers worked. So it sounds like, they were painted. They were stickers.
Well, also at the beginning, they said they hadn't finished all their safety checks.
Yeah, it's like, so sending, like,
we shouldn't have had this party until all the safety checks were done.
Yep.
Yeah, so maybe, like, the sprinklers would have worked if they waited like a month.
Yeah, it could have been. So there's kind of three moments, right, where someone says, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this or whatever. And that's one of them. So it's kind of,
but there's no question, right? Roger Simmons is like the most villainous person I've ever seen in a movie.
Are you talking about Richard Chamberlain?
That's Richard Chamberlain.
Yeah. So one of my wife's favorite movies is called The Slipper and the Rose, and it's a 3-hour musical about Cinderella with Richard Chamberlain. And that's how I know Richard Chamberlain.
Is it good?
It's not.
That sounds okay. Yeah.
Is he one of the wicked stepsisters?
No,
I can't see him as a good guy after this.
He's the prince. He's Prince Charming in that film. But also, like, I don't know this, but in real life, is Richard Chamberlain gay? Because when I watch A Slipper in the Rose, all I can think is, oh my gosh, he's got to be gay. So maybe I'm just wrong. But anyway,
maybe he's a really good actor.
He keeps, like, trying his best to not kiss Cinderella, right? He's like, but anyway.
I guess that wouldn't be a good actor if you're thinking he's gay during a heterosexual movie.
He has what's a prince's best friend, but also servant, that person, right? They spend a lot of time dancing together. So anyway, that's The Towering Inferno, John. It's pretty long. But it's pretty entertaining, and all the actors are, I never even once mentioned Fred Astaire. He was there to con some old lady out of her money. He fesses up and they love each other, but she falls out of the scenic elevator.
That was crazy. I thought that was, you know, that was like one of those, like, okay, you kind of get the people who deserve to die, you know, like, of course, yeah. Duncan dies. Well, not Duncan. Of course, Roger Simmons dies. And, you know, of course, all these other people who are greedy dies. But there were a couple times, you know, like the quiet bartender who was quietly helping everybody and, like, helping all the kids and stuff. Like, he dies at the very, very end. He's like crushed by a pillar. Yeah. And then, you know, they sacrifice, you know, Fred Astaire is like working so hard and he like finally resolves this thing, you know, with this woman, you know, that and they come to an understanding and clap, she's dead, you know.
So I thought she was going to die earlier in the movie. There's a 1-hour and 10-minute sequence where Paul Newman is climbing up and down a stair railing. So
that was a great scene.
It was really Paul Newman. That's why.
Yeah.
It was
right. So, yeah, that's what we were noticing. It's like, oh, I can see Paul Newman's face on that guy. They didn't digitally graft his face onto
his own stunts.
Yeah, he's doing all this stuff.
What did you guys think of Paul Newman's office? Not his real office, but his lady time office. He had a secret sexy office.
It kind of reminds me of my office here. Yeah.
Your office at home?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm disappointed that there was not a single moment in which someone looked up and said, that tower is a real inferno or something like that.
Yeah. No, it was... Well, the thing is, as fun as this is and as great as, you know, it is seeing Paul Newman and Steve McQueen and all of these people, it sure does feel like a TV movie. Like,
yeah.
I feel like it didn't quite... It was everything I wanted it to be, but also I feel like it could have been so much more. It could have had so many more great lines and more, you know, just crazy stuff happened. But it was The Towering Inferno. I've always heard of this movie, and I'm glad I watched it.
Yay! Okay, so back to Towering Inferno. Can we talk about who else should have been in this movie that maybe were disappointed didn't make the cut? Because this is like a mad world for disaster films, right?
Well, Heston.
So, yeah, Heston.
Oh, he'd
right.
be good.
Heston. I think Telly Savalas would have been good.
Telly Savalas.
Oh, yeah.
How about Saxon. Shatner would have been good. I would have liked to see John Saxon.
John Saxon. Okay, sorry. What's he in?
Well, he's in Mitchell. He's the bad guy in Mitchell, but he's in a lot of stuff.
Okay, yeah.
And so is it Michael Ironsides that is the 1980s John Saxon? They look almost identical.
Okay, yeah, Michael Ironsides looked like John Saxon. Okay. What about, like, what's her name? Thigh Master. Suzanne Summers.
Suzanne Summers?
Cheryl Teagues. And
so I think now you're just naming Sports Illustrated girls. So
Meatloaf,
sure.
I was thinking Timothy Dalton would be good in it.
Oh boy,
because we don't get enough
James Bond actors.
Yeah. Lazenby should have been in Towering Inferno. That would have
been good. And everybody would be like, "What do I know him from?"
Yeah. That'd be like what's another James Yaphet Kotto maybe would be good.
Well, the Tilly, he's James Bond villain.
Let's see who else. I guess is it too early to have done Gene Hackman?
Gene Hackman was in the conversation in 73, so that works. I want to say Elliot Gould.
Elliot Gould, yeah.
Probably needed to be there, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, there was room for lots more celebrities to get crashed or flooded or burned.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that's all I have to say about Towering Inferno. I don't know if I have anything else. A lot of awards for Towering Inferno. Katie, are you ready to talk about Flash Gordon?
Yes.
All right.
This is intimidating because it's John's favorite movie.
It is my favorite movie. I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but yeah, it is.
Was it scary for both of you to watch it together? Was it scary?
Yeah.
No, I was excited. And John, I think John was nervous, but I was just excited.
I thought you were nervous.
Okay. No, I'm nervous to describe it to you right now, but watching it was super fun. And I was telling him that it was way more enjoyable to watch it with him, you know, because he gets all excited and he'd say a couple lines.
Okay, good.
And he'd be like, "Love this scene. Roy loves this scene. I love this scene.
I was worried I was being annoying.
And of the two movies scored by Queen, this is the better.
Yeah, just barely though, because Highlander is my second favorite movie.
Maybe that's why John was nervous, because I hated Highlander when I watched it.
And you pointed out the dumb things in Highlander. I'm like, that's a good point, but I still like it.
so that's fine.
I didn't know anything.
I think I just, yeah.
So, John, no apologies. This is your number one movie of all time. Is that the truth?
It's probably not the honest truth. The story of me, of Flash Gordon being my favorite movie, is when I decided to make a list of my favorite movies 20 years ago. I decided that Flash Gordon was my favorite movie that day. And so it's always just kind of existed there. So if anybody ever asks what's my favorite movie, then I say Flash Gordon. It's more like a placeholder than anything else. It is, I think it works perfectly as when someone asks me what my favorite movie is, I say this movie and then they understand me a little bit. I think that's its main purpose.
Okay, so let me ask this, because I don't know a single thing about the comics. Is Flash Gordon playing for the quarterback for the Jets? Is that in the comics, or is that just a 1980 movie thing?
I'm pretty sure it's just a 1980 movie thing, I think. I only like the movie. I never really read the comics. I read that book you sent me for Christmas one time. I don't think it mentions anything.
The Lion Men of Mongo.
Yeah, the Lion Men of Mongo. If anybody out there is listening, I have another podcast called... what's it called? Safe Words Aloud is what it's called. And I read the entirety of The Lion Men of Mongo on that podcast because, you know, there is no audiobook of this Flash Gordon novel. I don't believe he mentions he's quarterback of the New York Jets in the novel.
Okay. All right. I'm done talking. Katie, it's all you.
All right. Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon is... It's just a quirky romantic comedy about Dale Arden, a small New York travel agent, and how she meets and gets engaged to NFL quarterback for the New York Jets, Flash Gordon, in a matter of days, all while saving the Earth together in space. So it's like a Hallmark movie, but one that guys like to.
That's a good point. That is what it's about, huh?
Yeah, it follows the typical romance comedy. It's a little bit of Princess Bride in there, you know, like the marrying the villain while you think your true intended love is dead, and you know, it's all there.
Yeah. Okay.
So same formula. They do get engaged. I think does he propose or does she? I think he says
he proposes.
Save it for our kids.
We'll get to that.
Right?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so it opens up with there's this space villain named Ming, and he is bored, and he is, like, toying with Earth. He's going to destroy it, but he's just playing around, having a good time first with, like, earthquakes and volcanoes. And then Flash, Gordon, and Dale, they meet on a plane, and it crashes due to one of these natural disasters. It is hot hail, which I think is awesome. So their plane crashes. Well, the pilots get vaporized, and then they crash the plane into conveniently Zarkov's lab. And Zarkov is a scientist who has been warning the world about an attack from space, and nobody's listened to him. So that's the warning here. He's been warning everybody about this attack from space, and nobody listens. And so this final attack, he's like, I was right all along. Nobody's listened to me. And so he's going to take his rocket into space and fight Ming. Although I don't think he knows like who Ming is. He's just going to go towards where the attack is coming from. But he can't fight a rocket alone. So he kidnaps Dale and Flash, who conveniently crashed into his lab as he was getting ready to go.
His lab assistant won't go with him.
But, yeah, and then their plane crashes into him, so they just...
Yeah, that's true.
Take place.
What's that guy's name? It's like Mullins or something?
Munson,
who is Porkins from Star Wars.
Oh, and he's also the guy in Raiders of the Lost Ark who says we have top men working on this. Top men.
Oh, really?
Right? Because that's Porkins. Oh, I know that guy's Porkins, and so I didn't connect Porkins to this guy in Flash Gordon. Okay.
So you mentioned that that Zarkov doesn't really seem to have a plan, but he does take a pistol with him. So I think whoever is attacking the planet Earth from space that's technologically advanced enough to cause all these natural disasters on Earth, he's going to go defeat them with his handgun.
I'm hoping we don't see it, but I'm hoping the payload is just filled with pistol bullets. Because, like, he would have had to shoot, like, a million people with his pistol, right?
Yeah. So they fly off to what turns out to be, is it Mondo or Mongo? Mongo.
Yes, right? Mongo.
Mongo. Where Ming is at. And Mongo is a planet with many moons. And then on each of these moons lives a different, this is their term, not mine, breed of people. And so Ming has all these different people constantly fighting or unhappy with each other so that he can rule over all of them and sort of control his little universe. So they arrive into Mongo at this ceremony where they're all sort of presenting stuff to Ming. It's a little bit like Dorothy landing in Munchkinland and meeting all the guilds. So they meet like the tree people and the hawk people, and there's the black guys in gold, which we never see again, sadly. They don't get to be in the final fight. And they're all paying tribute. And then Flash insults Ming by calling him a psycho. And they have this football fight. And then Ming plays a game of Mary, Boff, Kill. And he decides to kill Flash, marry Dale, and Boff Zarkov by erasing his brain and become a soldier.
Nice.
Then you're introduced to Aura, which is Ming's daughter, who has a very normalized and open sex addiction. She saves Flash so that she can have sex with him later. And everybody thinks he's dead. And then there's a bunch of, you know, chaos and hijinks of telepathy and fakeouts and tortures and fights and roofie juice. And they eventually all team up, the tree people, the bird people, with their leader, who's James Bond, and they fly to Ming's palace where he's about to get married to Dale, and they fight him. They interrupt the wedding. Dale and Flash get engaged in a really romantic way mid-fight, where she says, "I got some crazy stories for you," and he says, "Save them for our kids."
He doesn't want to hear them.
I accept. Yeah. And then she says, "I accept," and then they kill his they melt his torture mistress, and then they kill his like second in command,
Skeletor.
Oh, I call them Gold Darth Vader.
Right. Actually, you called him Cletus when we were watching it.
That's because his subtitles are on.
Yeah.
And I was like, Cletus?
His name is Cletus. You saw Cletus before they said his name out loud. And it's like Cletus. I'm like, I've never pronounced it that way, but yes, Cletus.
Yeah, Cletus. So they kill Cletus. They melt his torture mistress, and they save the universe. Oh, and they kill Zarkov. Or not, they kill Zarkov. They kill Ming.
They kill
Ming. He gets stabbed through the stomach with a
spaceship.
I watched it a second time after I watched it with John, so I watched it twice. And I'm pretty sure I'm right that he says he can't be killed by an Earthling, and so he kills himself with his vaporizing ring.
You think he killed himself?
He totally does.
You did say that when we watched it, and I was just kind of like, maybe, I guess. I never thought about it, you know, because...
Yeah, I said it, and then when I watched it again, and I was like, oh, it's really obvious, because he's like, oh, no Earthling can take my life, and then he has that little ring that vaporizes people, and he turns it around on himself, and he vaporizes himself.
But was it because
it's
kinda,
you'll never take me alive, copper sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
like an honorable death.
The ring at the end.
I don't know. I think it's...
When it's the end?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, well,
they're all heroes, and Mongo, like, the moons are united, and he saves the day, and then...
I think the questionable person who picks up Ming's ring at the end was the orb that said, "This Ming is a psycho," but that was just like... Like his
no, it's someone, they're wearing, like, black velvet gloves.
Yeah, they got black velvet gloves, unless the orb has, like, a big glove extension.
So I think it's either Aura, or it could be Dale, because she had that black wedding dress on with the Happy New Year's headband.
So one of the girls is going to do it.
Well,
according to IMDb trivia, it said the plan was to resurrect Cletus, and he was going to be the next
one. So when he died, like his eyeballs popped out.
Right. Maybe he wasn't dead. Like Cletus doesn't have eyes and a tongue anymore, but he's still alive.
He could get one of those visionary goggles.
Oh yeah, he took the what do they say? One of the viewmasters off the guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
they're like the guys from Dune we decided.
Yes, like
the viewer guys. Yeah. Yeah. Except if you take their goggles off, they're like Christmas lights and they all go out.
Yeah. They're guys like
one goes
that
out, they all go out.
Yeah, they're like, that's right, they're Christmas lights, huh? It's like, okay, don't take the first one because then everybody behind them will go out.
Like, one of these is out, go check them all. Who took their glasses off?
That's really good. Okay, thank you.
That's John's favorite rom-com.
Yes, it is. It is my favorite rom-com. I think my favorite part of the rom-com is just how close Flash comes to winding up with Aura. That's like the tension between like which girl he's going to wind up with. That's
the Hallmark movie formula.
Forget I said it.
Small town girl, famous like prince guy.
And
competition
is there,
in the middle, you know.
Is there any other woman who's like who plays like the, you know, the seductress better than, you know, Ornella Muti as Princess Aura? Like, is anything more overt than just like, I'm going to wreck your romantic life?
And it's like all the men that she is stringing it along, they all know about each other.
Right, right. You know? She gets her
she has her own pleasure palace moon that she just takes men to. And it's openly discussed in front of her father. Like, her father says, oh, your appetites are dangerous. I'm not going to let you have this one.
Yeah, yeah.
And she has a pet midget, so that's...
Yes. That's holy cow, she does. It's...
Is this movie where the song Sex Dwarf comes from?
She's got him on a leash. So.
Yeah.
For a little bit.
She has a leash sex dwarf, yeah. It was a different... It was a different time and place, Mongo. Yeah, so can't hold that against Mongo.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things. Like, I think now... Flash would probably get in trouble because every insult that he gives to somebody is that they're crazy. Like, you're psycho. You're crazy. This place is an insane asylum. He even calls the hawk people loony birds.
I never noticed that. It's not like this isn't a way to run things, or it's like, you know, you're cruel or mean or whatever. It's just like, this is crazy. That's funny.
Yeah, he says this place is a psycho award or something. No, he calls Ming a psycho. And then...
This Ming is a psycho.
The orb corrects him. The orb doesn't use contractions. The orb is like data. No contractions. This Ming is a psycho.
Oh, man. I love this movie. It's been a long time since I've seen this, but it was... it was delightful watching this movie. There's like the little things, like the writing in this film is so good. So like the fact that Flash Gordon introduces himself to Ming as quarterback of the New York Jets, that's a really small detail. I love it. I think that is so great.
Like if you got whisked away to another planet, like just so you know, I'm quarterback for the New York Jets.
But the whole like. When you're talking about like Aura and how overtly sexual she is, but there's like an uncomfortable part with Ming, right? Where Cletus says, speaking of Dale, right? He says she even rivals your daughter, and like Cletus and Ming are discussing that Dale might be as sexy as his daughter.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because they zap her with the sex ring.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they give him like roofie juice. That they drink to make him forget.
Yeah, it's willing roofie juice that makes you not mind remembering.
Yeah. It doesn't have a name either, but many men have died to get it to them. And a lunatic asylum, that's what he calls it.
Oh, Zarkov, like, his wife died, right? Like, that's one of the memories that we see? But it kind of looks like she just fell into the pool, and I'm not sure why someone didn't just like get her out or
so
during
okay.
a party. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went back last night and I watched the like memory erasing. So they're erasing Zarkov's memory and then they're going to like reprogram it. And so I went back and I watched that whole memory erasing in like slow motion, like frame by frame almost. It was so weird. First of all, well, I had it down as like one of my goofs because he's forgetting everything backwards, but all the scenes are actually playing forwards.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. It's weird. But yeah, so there's like a party and they're all laughing and they're running around the pool and then they grab her and they swing her like you would like a little kid, like swinging like by their arms and legs. And then they throw her in the pool and then she drowns. She just covers her up with a towel. And then they have this big like funeral, but that seems really modern. But then after that, he's like in like World War II and escaping like Russia or something. And it shows all these world leaders and it will show their face and then it will switch like frame and alternate their face in an animal. And so it has like Churchill and then a lion and Churchill and a lion and Churchill and a lion. And then they have like Stalin and an ape and Stalin and an ape. And there's a bunch of weird, like Eisenhower and a chimpanzee. And there's a bunch of tigers. Yeah, it's really weird.
It shows Hitler and then Cletus says he showed promise.
He showed promise.
Oh, but my favorite in that memory forgetting scene is that I paused it and it shows him resigning from NASA. And there's an article and it says space scientist fired. And you can read the article. And the first paragraph is like, this guy is going to be fired because he has a bad temper. And then the whole rest of the article is about a town called Wellesley, about how they're going to vote on getting leash laws for the dogs because the dogs are pooping all over the town.
What? No way.
Oh, wow.
Holy
wow.
cow. I guess when they showed this so in the much theater dog in 1980, poop. They did not know people could freeze the screen when they made the movie.
And they're like, there's so much dog poo. And then it's like, the question will be taken up at the town meeting that began last night.
No way.
It's such a weird article.
Holy cow.
So is it just me? Like his final memory that's supposed to be his earliest memory is it's him in the womb, right?
Like a fetus, but so
maybe I'm just weird, but I swear his mom is not making I'm giving birth noises. His mom is making I'm like a like
I'm baby making
I'm making
noises.
A baby noises. Yeah. Yeah,
right.
So does he is he remembering his conception? Because that's what it sounds like.
Well, he's a very smart guy. Yeah, he's a smart guy. Probably has a really good memory.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I have a new theory about his wife dying. Because I was like really confused because it looks like they're at a party and then she's like – then he's alone with her and he covers her up with a towel. Yeah. I kind of feel like it was a party where everyone in the party drowned in the pool except for Zarkov.
No, because some of the people at the party are at her funeral.
They're at the funeral.
Oh, dang it. Okay. Yeah.
The guys that threw her in are at the funeral. I think maybe he paid to have her offed.
That seems it's right. Yeah, that's possibly true.
She wasn't supporting him at NASA.
She didn't believe in aliens. Yeah, she didn't believe there was an invasion.
So,
go ahead.
I have a few questions about this movie. I don't understand why the Hawkmen need rocket gliders or rocket sleds, whatever you want to call them.
It might be for
the Hawk
children.
The Hawk
children
whose wings haven't developed. Yeah, well, I guess so. I guess that could be.
You know, like you ride a bike.
How about this? No, they don't need one. But okay, say like one of the Aborians comes up, you know, like rockets up to their place, and then he's like, "Well, you know, I have a message from you know Prince Baron," and they're like, "Well, before we hear your message, you have to get onto the onto the spiky platform that shakes and fight one of us," and then the messenger dies, and then they're like, "Well, we're not just going to throw away the rocket cycle. We're just going to keep it."
Oh man! So
that's a thought.
I don't know if this is going to come up in awards, but the final moment in this movie is so great. Like right when the orb like you know thanks him for saving.
Do you want to tell the story of when you watched this with JB?
I'm not sure what the story is, although I have a distinct JB link to this. But it's just so great because, like, Flash Gordon takes the time to put the weapon down and slide it out of the view of the camera, right? It's off, and then he jumps up and does the, yeah! Oh, it's such a beautiful moment. It's almost my best scene. I almost chose it for my best scene, but I didn't. But what's the story that you remember, John?
Well, no, the story I remember you telling me is that, you know, back when you were, like, 20... And you're like, hey, JB, you've never seen Flash Gordon? It's great. Watch it. And then you watched it with JB, and you were laughing the whole time, and JB was stone-faced the entire movie. He's just like, ugh. Just completely stone-faced. But then when Flash, when the thing says, congratulations, Flash, you've saved your Earth. Have a nice day. And he goes, yeah! That's when JB lit up and laughed so hard.
Oh, well, sure. I'll choose to believe that. Yeah.
Okay. You told me that. Okay, that's fine. Well, okay. Let me ask, Katie. We talked about this a little bit, but Roy and I were talking a little bit before on the Skype call. Is Flash Gordon? Is it a comedy or is it like an action movie? Like, what is it?
Well, I asked you this the other day. Because I had just checked it out from the library and I looked for it in the comedy section and then I couldn't find it. So I finally had to look it up and it was in the science fiction section. And that's why I asked you. I said, what kind of movie is this? And so you told me science fiction comedy.
Which I guess there aren't a lot of.
No, but I went with romantic comedy, science fiction.
It's pretty romantic. Yeah.
It's funny because Roy and I, we used to watch this in high school all the time because we used to love Mystery Science Theater 3000, and we thought it's fun to watch kind of older movies, and you know, Flash Gordon isn't super new or super old, but we watched it because the first five times we watched it, we were kind of like, look how cheesy this is. Look at their wings move here. You know, look at these crazy colors. Look at what Flash Gordon is wearing. You know, look how much of a joke this movie is. And we'd laugh at the movie. And it actually took us a while to kind of laugh with the movie. Because it kind of does that thing where it's like, okay, you know, we're sort of making a movie that's worth making fun of, but it's not like the Sharknado movie or whatever, where it's being so overt. It's hiding behind the line a little bit. It's like this movie could almost exist. Like it's almost seriously like sincere in these action sequences, but not quite. And it doesn't make it as obvious as something else that
it reminds me of like, so I have a, you know, my friends have kids and stuff, and they used to talk about the kids cartoons that they didn't mind watching with their kids because they had jokes in there like for adults.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're like, oh, I don't mind watching the Barbie TV show because it's actually really funny and the plots are pretty good, you know, or well, like the Gravity Falls. A lot of people don't mind watching that. So it reminds me of that, like a movie that it's kind of a joke, but is actually still kind of fun. Like,
so
it's okay to watch.
I will say this movie does have an earnestness to it, right? There is some sincerity here, but also, as I've only like just this week discovered, this movie was written by the writer of the Batman TV show in the 1960s, and that was definitely like intentionally goofy and funny, right? So I think in the same vein, like the writing was meant to be fun and funny. So I think this movie is intentional much more than we gave it credit for. And I don't know if that brings it down a bit. The fact that maybe some of these jokes where we thought we were laughing at the movie, it turns out that they were intentional and we're laughing with the movie. Does that make it better? I don't know. And maybe it doesn't matter at all because just watching this film again, I enjoyed it, man. I enjoyed every minute of this movie. What a fun movie to watch. Anyway.
I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but I do enjoy Flash Gordon, the movie. It's good.
Yeah. I also, by the way, I love the 1960s Batman TV show, and I, I think we watched, well, we did. We watched the movie with John for the podcast, the Batman, the movie. And I love that too. So what can you do?
If anybody wants to hear me contradict myself and talk about how much I hated the original Batman movie, but how much I love Flash Gordon, well, I guess you could just listen to what I just said just now instead of going back on one of our old podcasts. But I notoriously don't like the original Batman movie because I don't think it's as funny as everybody says. But I do like Flash Gordon. I guess they are pretty similar, but a little bit different. You know, there are just some things, you know, just for example, and this is something that could very easily be in the Batman movie, but I just want to mention just something that, you know, because I don't think it made any, well, I'll probably mention it again, but.
Is it the sexy costumes?
Well, the sexy costumes help, yeah. But just an example of the type of humor that I just didn't notice, because it's an obvious joke. It's an obvious joke. But, you know, when it just cuts for one, literally 1 second to Zarkov and Baron chained up in a dungeon, Zarkov the Urkling and Baron the Prince of some far away, and it just cuts to them chained in a dungeon, and Prince Baron says to Zarkov, "Tell me more about this Houdini," and then cuts to the rest of the movie, and it's just so funny because it's not like it's like they were imprisoned long enough for him to tell him all about Houdini. And then it cuts back, you know, there was like some kind of lull in the conversation. He's like, "Tell me more about this Houdini who lives on Earth, who escapes from places," you know, and it's just like, It's just two guys in a prison talking. I just, yeah, I don't know. That's just lovely and funny. Okay. Anyway, Flash Gordon is my favorite movie. I feel like I should mention a lot more of it. I have a lot of awards, so I'll save it for them. Yeah. We didn't talk about how the Hawkman can fly, even though they don't flap their wings very fast, but that's not important. It's just a funny thing. They're barely flapping their wings.
Hawks don't. So, they often don't flap their wings. They just, you know, soar.
Glide. They are kind of soaring. Yeah. The Hawkmen do kind of soar.
Maybe they're gliding down, you know, like they were going to take a parachute one time. Maybe the Hawkmen,
yeah,
they just glide down.
Yeah.
So I think that's... The people who, like, their faces are coming out of snake mouths, do they belong to Arborea?
Oh, my gosh. Those were so weird. The lizard men?
Yeah, like, human the, faces coming
their faces
out of the
are inside the mouth.
The costume aisle men? Like, you just, like, have the snake masks on?
The one gets zapped that it's running around, so it made me think, like, oh, they're like vermin. But then they're also in the cage on Arborea in the, like, swamp. But then when Flash is killed the first time, she actually is killed, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
She says, "Hurry, we have to wake him up before the lizard people come to bury him." So I think they're just like
a slave class.
Maybe.
They're like slaves, but also... I guess if they're unregistered,
vermin,
they kill him. Yeah.
So one last thing I'll say about Flash Gordon. I love the color scheme in this movie so much. Just the red, the black, and the gold. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm done.
Okay. All right. That's Flash Gordon. All right. You guys want to talk about Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
I guess.
Okay. So in Ghostbusters... there is a ghost in the library. These guys at the university who are pretty much coasting at this university because they're the weirdo professors at the university. They go and check out the ghost. And the ghost scares them, and they get some readings, and then they come back to the university, and they're like, "You know what? Why are you guys even here at NYU? We're kicking you out." Is it NYU or is it Columbia? It doesn't matter. It's some prestigious New York
university. It's filmed at Columbia, but I can't remember what they say, but it's filmed at Columbia.
Okay. I don't know how they got jobs there, because apparently Venkman is just not an intelligent person at all. So I don't know how he got by in academia, but he is really good at talking to people, so he probably just talked his way through school. They're like, "Okay, well, we're going to have to do this ourselves. We can't rely on the university. Unfortunately, the real world expects results," which is a great line. And so they get three mortgages on Dan Aykroyd's house, which I don't even understand how that works.
You didn't even bargain with the guy.
19%.
The interest alone for the first 3 years is $80,000.
$95,000, isn't it?
Was it 95? I can't remember. Yeah, it was like some, like, yeah, it was like almost $100,000 of interest. and so, yeah, so they start a company. They start Ghostbusters. But there aren't that many ghosts yet until there's a monster in Ripley's kitchen. And so she goes over, and Bill Murray instantly falls in love with her, and he wines and dines her. Now, keep in mind, they start the business, and in the hallway, Rick Moranis, Louis Tully, says he's having a party on Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, yeah, I'll try to make it on Thursday. And so I would assume this is Monday because he says the party is on Thursday. And so Dana Barrett is their first client, and they're looking up stuff in Tobin's spirit guide in the meantime. And then the bells go off, there are ghosts all over town, and there's this big montage of them busting ghosts all over town. And then that's when Winston Zeddemore joins, which I never understood. Like, I don't understand. It's great. I think Winston Zeddemore is a great character. But I never understood, like, why, you know, they start the movie with three Ghostbusters and they end the movie with four Ghostbusters. Like, I don't know why it was important that he joins. But that's another
thing. So, there's a point in the film where they're just too busy. They can't handle the load, right? I mean, you remember when they hire him. They don't even interview him. They say, good, you're hired. You start now.
Yeah.
And they're just too busy.
See, I understand, like, why they would do that in real life. But I just, like, just from a script perspective, you know, a story perspective, I don't know why it's important.
So I think
that there are four.
Because I think people already know who the big three are, right? Because they're all in Stripes and other movies, right? But no one knows who Ernie Hudson, is that his name? No one knows who he is, so I think you got to introduce him.
So it was just a favor to Ernie Hudson, the actor?
Maybe they needed, like, the muscle, you know, because it's like three nerdy scientists can't be doing all this work, so they need the muscle. And maybe they didn't believe at the time that a black guy could be a scientist, so he just
Well, that's true. That's
came
true.
In.
So, but I think it's like the point though is to demonstrate that like how busy they got real fast. And like you said, the party's on Thursday. So what's this? Is this Tuesday?
Yeah.
Wednesday? I don't know.
Right.
They're crazy busy. Yeah.
So pretty much Tuesday and Wednesday are like they're working what appears to be 52-hour days.
Ghostbusters are only open for a week, like total, of their career.
Because that's when all the magazine covers happen and the interviews, you know.
But not according to the secretary, because she says, I've been working every day for weeks without a break.
She said, I've worked 2 weeks without a break. And also Winston says, I've only been, like when he gets thrown in jail with them, he says, I've been with these guys for 2 weeks. So anyway, am I to believe the ghosts open some kind of parallel time dimension here or something?
Lewis has more than one party.
He has a party every Thursday.
Lewis frequently has parties.
Every Thursday he invites his clients.
Standing party with your accountant on Thursdays.
Okay. So anyway, the point is the EPA comes and Bill Murray kind of makes fun of the EPA guy and he says, by the way, if you shut this thing off, then it will cause a catastrophe on the city. And so then the EPA comes back and they, you know, bring like this cop and this worker guy to shut down the containment field. And they're like, you know, don't do that because there's a big Twinkie in there. It's going to, like, be huge.
Can we get on the same page? So before he shuts it down, Lewis has already become Vince Clortho, and Dana has already become Zool.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So the pieces are already in place. But does that mean they never would have connected if the containment unit hadn't been shut down? Because I think Rick Moranis' character says he's waiting for the sign.
Right.
So I'm trying to get to the Cassandra moment. Like, does the Cassandra moment matter, or would the gatekeeper and the keymaster have hooked up anyway? Because when Bill Murray shows up at her apartment, she's Like, if he were the Keymaster, then Gozer would have come, right?
Right.
Yeah, I talk about that in my extra awards.
Really?
About, like, shut it off, would they have just hung out as dogs until the 2021 Ghostbusters?
So I don't know. It's because I think that all they needed was for Dana and Lewis to get together, and they didn't get together until after the sign brought them together. But and so New York City is a big city. Maybe they wouldn't have bumped into each other. I don't know. But anyway.
That brings up another question I have, because, like, what is the sign? Vince Clorthell says to the horse that he thinks is a ghost, I guess, because he doesn't know what a horse is, I guess.
Yeah.
Vince? says, watch for the sign, you know, watch for the sign, because that's when all the evil spirits are going to gather together. But what the sign is all the spirits being released.
Released.
So it's like the sign is, it's like self-reflexive, right?
Yeah. Also, is Vince Clortho an idiot, or is, like, Vince Clortho, like, limited by being trapped in Lewis's body? Like, is there an amalgamation of the two of them?
I kind of like to think that, okay, like, whenever... Is Vince Clortho, like, this ancient spirit, or is Vince Clortho the ghost of one of Ivor Shandor's followers who built the building?
I don't know, but Vince Clortho seemed to remember, like, the last two times the Gozer came, right?
Maybe he knew all those names.
He knew all the names, but is that something he learned in, like, Gozer school?
Shubs and Zubles.
In
Shandor's school.
Okay, because here's kind of what I think. I think, well, Zul is an ancient demon, though, so that doesn't make sense. But, okay, maybe Zul is an ancient demon, and maybe Vince Clortho is a nerdy cult member, and so they don't necessarily have to be both ancient demons, but they both have to be under the spell. They, you know, the spell that's cast that brings Gozer back, and they need both of them to do it. And I think Vince Clortho is like this nerdy cult member, and kind of like many nerdy cult members, they join a cult because they know they might have a chance with the hot female members of the cult.
Hot female ancient demon.
Ancient
so by
demons,
the way,
yeah. So that was a perk of joining Ivo Shandor's cult back in the '20s.
If you haven't seen this movie since you were a kid, The Keymaster and the Gatekeeper, get it? Okay.
Right.
All right.
In the new Ghostbusters that just came out, they talk very openly about how that's how you bring back Gozer, is the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper get it on. Yeah. Anyway, so I don't know if... Okay, well, we're going to talk about this when we do awards, but it kind of seems like the sign isn't too important because, I mean, surely there's nothing keeping the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper apart. And also, all the ghosts that they've been busting this whole time, I suppose none of those ghosts mean anything at all, right?
Do they show up? Do they help? Do they add to, like, the Gozer strength? I don't know. We don't see them, right? They just kind of leave.
It's just pretty much ghosts exist, but then the whole Gozer thing, bringing Gozer back by these two people who get possessed, I mean, because demonic possession, that's completely different than ghosts, right? So it's almost like these are two stories, and just ghosts exist, and the Ghostbusters bust their heads, or, you know, bust the ghosts into the thing, and then in the meantime, there's this almost like a separate thing where these two demons inhabit these two humans, and them having sex brings back this weird Hittite god. None of those things in that second story have anything to do with ghosts. Weird. Okay, so anyway, Gozer comes back, and then they neutronize Gozer by aiming for the flat top, and then Gozer says, okay, I'm going to bring back Gozer, my other manifestation, which, okay, so is Gozer the Destructor and Gozer the Traveler, are those two different people, or does Gozer come back as the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, but then the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man melts. So I feel like the Gozer girl goes back into the gate, and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is just this mindless kind of golem thing?
Well, could be. I always thought they were the same people, kind of like Apollo Creed is both the King of Sting and the Master of Disaster.
Thank you for that example. Perfect. Thank you. anyway, they said...
Count the Monte Cristo. So.
They said they're not supposed to cross the streams because you might explode at the speed of light, which, I don't know. exploding at the speed of light and then just exploding in general, I don't see much of a difference there. But they cross the streams and they melt the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Marshmallows fall everywhere and apparently protect them from the world's largest building explosion ever that's ever been recorded, like bigger than the one in Die Hard or anything. And they survive, and then Dana and Lewis Tully, they come out of the dog things, and everybody's okay until Gozer comes back in 2021.
Yeah. Did you enjoy the new movie?
I did enjoy it, and then I went on to Letterboxd, you know, like I always do, and then I noticed that all the people I follow really didn't like the new Ghostbusters movie. I must say I liked it more than the, like, 2016 Ghostbusters movie, although I like the 2016 Ghostbusters movie just because it's, like, packed full of jokes, which is fine.
Yeah.
In this Ghostbusters movie, the new Ghostbusters movie in this 1984 Ghostbusters movie kind of feel a little bit kind of closer together in tone and everything. Because one thing about this Ghostbusters movie is it's shot like a drama, and it's really funny and really hilarious, and I love a lot of the lines that Bill Murray says and stuff, but it's not, like, packed with jokes. It's kind of filmed like, okay, these are really ghosts and this really happened, and so it seems almost like a real-life comedy.
Yeah, it's got the pacing of an action film, right? So, and I think that's where, like, the reboot, which I enjoyed the reboot, by the way, was completely different because it was just a straight-up, unapologetic comedy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I like the new one, and so spoiler, right? All the original Ghostbusters come back. So I did like it when you do see them again, their intro is I think it's Bill Murray, right, that says, "Hey, Flat Top," and so anyway. Nice little callback. So they looked old. They looked old and tired, right? So I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I liked how both times the building was saved by exploding stuff from the top. So, like, Towering Inferno, they blow up the water tanks, and then Ghostbusters, they blow up the marshmallow tanks, and it falls down onto everybody.
Yeah.
Same
that's
idea.
That's an internal recurring character there, right there.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I gotta cross that off now. All right. okay, so Ghostbusters is great. I've never considered, you know, the whole... I've never realized until just now, when I was talking about it just now, that ghosts kind of had nothing to do with Ghostbusters. But it's funny.
I recently saw Ghostbusters at the theater. Like, it came back as a classic film at the theater.
Yes.
That was so much fun. What a great movie to see at the theater.
I remember seeing it in 1984, and it was like one of those things that I just vividly remember, just having the most fun in the theater as just a little kid watching Ghostbusters in the theater.
So my dad bought us all Back Off Man, I'm a Scientist t-shirts right after this movie came out. But there are so many characters from actors from these movies that have repeated in other movies we've done. But if you notice, one of the cops at the jail is the black cop from Die Hard, right? I mean, you only see him for like 10 seconds in this film.
Yeah.
But
the Family Matters dad.
The Family Matters dad. Yeah.
Yeah. We saw him come up, and John was like, "Is that guy always a cop?"
Yeah. That's why he gets hired. He just, like, has the uniform. Like, it's tattooed on him, the cop
uniform. Maybe he just comes into auditions in the cop uniform.
Yeah.
So Gozer tells the Ghostbusters that they have to choose the form. And Bill Murray immediately says, "So if we think of J. Edgar Hoover, he's going to come and kill us." And I feel like that should have triggered J. Edgar Hoover.
That was one of my questions.
Katie said
that. How was that not who it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I do. Well, if it is,
but would he have been that big?
A giant J. I hopefully in drag, right? A giant J. Edgar Hoover in drag.
It must.
Wasn't he really big? Could he have fit down? I guess the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is really big.
Well, yeah,
it's the same body type.
If we saw a commercial for the Stay Puft, like, is it established that the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is like this giant marshmallow, or is it just like the Pillsbury Doughboy?
He's like the Michelin Man.
Yeah. Is the Michelin Man, like, is he pretty big? Is he like, does he tower like above people? The Michelin Man.
I think the Michelin Man does, but I'm not under the impression that the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is supposed to be 500 feet tall. I think that's Gozer's choice, right? So I must agree that it would have been a 500 foot tall J. Edgar Hoover.
That would have been messier when he blew up at the top of the tower in Inferno.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I didn't realize till watching it this time that there's Stay Puft Marshmallows all over the movie before that. Yeah. Like they're next to the eggs when they're jumping out of the cartons. And then
John
pointed out there's a billboard, like a painted building sign on one for marshmallows. It's everywhere.
So another thing that I didn't notice as a little kid, but there is a wardrobe malfunction in this film that happens real fast.
Is there? It has to be her orange dress, right?
No, it's her sweater. She's sitting on her chair and she's about to get like turned into a demon. And like one of the demon hands comes up through the armchair, through the arm of the armchair and grabs her sweater.
I knew that.
And for a split second, it pulls her sweater down and seeing that as an adult is like, oh, I don't remember that as a kid. But anyway, so yeah, that may be the total cinematic extent of a Sigourney Weaver bearing stuff. So
nice. Okay. Go. Yeah. You should submit that to, like, I don't know, like Mr. Skin, if that still exists.
I didn't see this movie in the theater when I was little because I was only 5 when it came out. Yeah. But we were one of the first people in our neighborhood that got a VCR. And when we had the VCR, we had 2 movies recorded off TV. We had Back to the Future and Ghostbusters. So like our friends would borrow the VCR and the movies. They're like, oh, can we borrow a movie and the VCR to watch it with, you know? But it was recorded off TV. And so... it was like the old 80s TV dubbed where there would be like swear words or lines dubbed over. And so there's some really funny lines that I didn't get to see until I was late, like an adult later. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so funny.
When I saw Ghostbusters on TV, I remember they said, okay, the famous line that Bill Murray says.
Best line.
It's the best line. It's the best line. We all know what it is. But he said, "Is this true?" And then in TV, it's like a separate take of Bill Murray saying, "It's true, Mr. Mayor. This man is some kind of rodent. I don't know which." It's a completely different line. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember that from TV. Yeah.
I remember seeing it the first time, this version, and me and my brother just like laughing our heads off because we didn't know. We didn't expect it.
It is such a perfect, it's like my favorite kind of joke. When someone asks about something, but it's like you use a different antecedent. Yeah,
that is a John joke. You do it every day.
I do it all the time. Whenever I get the chance, like I say the wrong thing when someone asks me a question, but it's like everything would have been fine until Dickless here turned off the containment center. Is this true? Yes, it's true. This man has no dick. That's my favorite type of joke.
So I also have got to believe that the TV version didn't include Race Dance's dream about the ghost.
That was in my questions of like, did Race get a ghost blowjob?
Okay, we're getting into questions here.
Did he just dream that?
I don't think so.
Did he just dream that or was that real? Yeah, okay.
I think that was real.
Also, another thing is like, as a kid, I'm like, why are my parents getting so upset? I don't get what's going on.
Yeah, that's one of those things that when I was a kid, I didn't know what that was happening there.
Are we answering this question right now before questions?
I don't know. I have other questions to ask later.
Yeah, okay. No, keep your questions to ask later. Let me just say this.
It does the dreamy thing, though, like makes the dreamy noises and does the dreamy waves.
It makes
waves.
The dreamy noises.
No,
and
that's
the
ghost making that sound.
Right, yeah, it is a ghost sound. But the thing is, it shows him falling out of bed as if he was dreaming it. And when he's in the dream, he's in a different bed than it shows him the one that he fell out of. So I think for that reason, it's just a dream had. But I think there's like a, like, I think that was a scene
that they shot, but they're like, okay, it's funny because he makes a funny face, so let's just add it to the montage of the movie. But I think there's like a scene where they go and do something and that actually happens, and it's like not part of the montage, it's like dialogue. And so I think it was just a fun thing they threw in, but for that reason I think it's a dream. Okay,
all right.
Okay, every time we say what about this, we always one of the rest of us says, hey, that's in my award. So maybe we should get to
my
award.
Questions. I have lots of questions.
I got two more questions.
If you answer some now.
Yeah, I got two more questions, and I'll wait for them. So I guess I'll ask one of them now. It's a Ghostbusters question, and I'll save my other question.
Go ahead.
So it feels to me like during the 80s, like the people, and maybe not people in general, maybe I just grew up in Utah, right? The people kind of hated the EPA. Like they were the big party poopers who wanted to ruin all of our fun by caring about the environment, right?
And they're stifling so I wondered, our like, businesses, yes.
Yeah, did the movie Ghostbusters do damage to, do they add to the distaste towards the EPA? Because the EPA is kind of the villain in this film, right?
Yeah, I've always thought that.
Yeah, I actually had the EPA as like one of my goofs because, first of all, this EPA guy comes in wearing a suit with a briefcase. Environmental protection guy dresses that fancy. And they're taking him totally seriously, and he has like the backup of the police. And in the 80s, there's no way the Environmental Protection Agency could get people to care that much about anything they had to say. So,
oh man, I love it when he rolls up, like four cars come from different angles, and he walks across the street. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Even now, when people love the environment, they're not, the EPA is not that like taken seriously.
But I like how it's like four or five cars roll up, but then three people walk into the building.
Yeah. So I actually had the seriousness of the EPA as a goof because that's not the way it works.
All right.
Okay. Do you guys have other questions?
I got one more that I'll save for reward.
I had one more Ghostbuster question that I maybe we can talk about it now. Is what's actually happening to them when the dogs like attack them? Because they don't come out like chewed up or scratched up. Are those like devil pit bulls? What are they doing to them when they take them in the closet or eat them on the veranda of the restaurant?
I guess they
eat
them.
7 minutes of heaven.
Right?
Do they mate with them? Like what?
No, I'm assuming they're mating. Eat them because they must eat them because like that would explain why when the dogs die, they're like inside the dogs.
Inside them? I don't know. That doesn't make sense because they get possessed before they get turned into dogs. So I don't know. I do love though that like for a moment Rick Moranis thinks he might have a milk bone in his pocket.
Oh, I love that part. He's like, hey, Poochie, maybe I got a milk bone.
John Candy was supposed to play that role, right?
He was supposed to be Louis Tully, John Candy.
Yeah, and I think like Rick Moranis just kills it. He does such a good job, but I think that I would love to see a John Candy version of this role. I think John Candy would have done a great job, too.
I think Paul Rudd did a pretty good job as the Keymaster in the new one.
Yeah.
You could tell
he kind of did like a Rick Moranis, like when he was the Keymaster. He was the same Keymaster.
Yeah, I think it's kind of sad that nerd culture has just vanquished from the earth in the year 2021, where it's like, okay, hey, who do we get to play the nerd? Paul Rudd, you know?
So they tried to get Rick Moranis back, and I thought that he had agreed to come back, but it kind of like the news of that faded, and obviously he's not in the film. Which is too bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me go back to the whole dog possession thing, because that was another question I had that kind of confused me. When Rick Moranis is pounding on the Central Park restaurant, let me in, and then he squeals down the window, down the glass. How come no one in the restaurant could see the dog? It's like the dog was invisible at that point. Is that part of it? Like the dog?
No, because they saw him at the party.
Right. And that's why I'm confused, because they see the dog at the party and then the dog attacks Rick Moranis. But then the people in the restaurant do not see the dog, even though they're just looking right out the window.
I think it's one of those things, like, it's dark, and so you can't see out, you know, because it's light and it's dark, and they see him against the glass, but you can't see what's outside.
Yeah.
So maybe this is just that New York City where they walk past people who need help, right?
Or it's the 80s.
Who are being attacked.
I think I would have liked it if they could see him get attacked by this mutant dog creature, but then they don't care. They're like, okay, well, that guy is being attacked by a mutant dog, but, well, we're in here eating, so. Okay. Okay. Are you guys ready to move on?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Before we move on to awards, we're just going to go ahead and say this right here. If you've been listening so far, this is how you can reach us. You go to yours, mine. Okay, Roy, what is it? Yours, mine, theirs podcast at gmail.com?
Yes.
Be one of the first people ever to email us. Email. It's still a thing. Go to yours, mine, theirs podcast at gmail.com. Also, if you're listening so far and you want to hear any of the other podcasts that we've ever done, you can go to the blog where you can download all the MP3s directly. And that's yours, mine, theirs podcast.blogspot.com.
And we're going to figure out how to get this on Spotify. John promised me.
Yeah, we're going to figure out Spotify. So if you have a Spotify thing and you happen to be listening to this, then you could probably listen on Spotify. But I don't know how Spotify works, so we promise we'll get on Spotify.
Andy Wilson, who's one of the three people who listens to this podcast, please tell John how to do it.
Yeah, let me know. That'd be great. Go to iTunes in the meantime. And Spotify, for that matter, and give us 5 stars on Spotify and iTunes and Stitcher, wherever else that the podcast exists. Give us 5 stars and then comment, say, give whatever review you want, 5 stars. That's important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Find us on Facebook. On Facebook, it's great because you can witness in real time as Roy takes notes furiously on all of these movies. And more importantly, that's where all the polls are that decide what movies and what categories of movies we watch in the future. So find us, the group, yours, mine, and theirs, on Facebook. I almost forgot one more thing. If you want to, and you should, call us. Give us a call. Leave us a message. We promise we'll play the message. Even if you're, even if it's an anti-vax screed, we'll play the message. And the number is 801-896-4542, 801-896-4542. So leave us a message. We'll play it. You can get your – at least the beginning – within reason. We'll play the first 3 minutes. If it's like that much of your manifesto, so be it. So front load it with some good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Awards. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Katie, what was your favorite title of these?
I went with The Towering Inferno.
Yeah, me too. Towering Inferno.
It sounds so scary.
Yeah, it's good. Roy?
So I love The Towering Inferno because it could be a disaster movie and it could be a disco film as well. It turns out to be a disaster film, but it's great.
Okay, cool. Okay, Roy, what do you have for best poster?
It's Flash Gordon. The sharp poster.
Katie?
Same. Flash Gordon.
Okay. I'm surprised, because I actually didn't go Flash Gordon on this. I like the red color scheme, but I also love the blackness of Ghostbusters and the three of them looking up at something really foreboding. Even though they're not looking up at a ghost, and this will haunt me forever, because, yeah, not many ghosts. Okay. Katie, best credits opening.
Oh, Flash Gordon, that Queen song.
Yeah. Now, you got to admit, I love the Queen song, but you got to admit, Queen really phoned it in, even though it is really awesome. I mean, can anybody replicate the drum beat of the Flash Gordon theme song? Do, 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 do. I definitely think the credits for Flash Gordon, because, you know, it's got the Flash, and then it's, well, I'll talk about that more later. Roy, agreement?
Yeah, I mean, you have the images from the comic book, but you also have, like, these wire frame computer graphics that, like, morph. They're awesome credits. So I will say, Like, the Towering Inferno had good credits. I love the, like, the Towering Inferno title, like, being, like, this inflamed sort of lettering, right? But Flash Gordon, those credits are fantastic.
It was so coordinated with the music, too. Like, Flash! Yeah. And then there'd be, like, a new cartoon that's like, Flash on onto your, the screen.
Yeah. Well,
and so cool. Thanks to the song, I'm aware that Flash Gordon is king of the impossible, among other things, so...
And a man with a man's courage.
Okay.
Katie, what's the best technology?
There's so many things in Flash Gordon, but I went with the Ghostbuster backpacks. Because what even are they? They call them a positron collider, nuclear backpacks.
Unlicensed nuclear collider, yeah, or something.
Yeah, and they're like completely untested, and that they work. I mean, that's amazing, so...
In some of your science circles, is there any discussion about like what those things actually are, like what kind of power they use, and like how they're able to trap ghosts? Do any of your friends talk about that kind of thing?
No, not we're more biology, less physics. That's more like physics and stuff.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's fine.
I think the storage tank is also pretty cool. I mean, because it's, I don't know. What
it's
is
a storage
it?
Tank that holds ghosts. That's insane.
I know. It's so, and like, what are they doing in there? Are they just like a ghost soup?
So I think like the Ghostbusters cartoon kind of explored that a little bit.
I was going to say that. I know, I remember in the cartoon things happening with the storage tank.
Yep.
Wow, I don't remember.
So I had the containment unit as my honorable mention, but for my technology, I chose the handgun from Flash Gordon. Being literally like the hand that shoots out of the gun. And
it shoots a hand out of a gun.
It shoots a hand, yep.
One of my favorite parts is when Flash Gordon goes to shake the guy's hand and he shoots a gun at him and the guy shoots a hand at his hand.
At his hand,
flips him over like judo. Like,
I like him when they're holding down Aura when she's being tortured. They just have four hands. Holding her arms and legs down. I thought that was cool use of him.
That's perfect. Okay, that's actually what I picked. I picked the handgun, but since you already picked it, I'm going to go to my alternate, which is Ming's sex ring. He has a ring that just makes you sexy. And Flash Gordon didn't know what it was, but as he says to Dale, that was pretty sensational. Okay, Roy, what's the best outfit?
There's so many choices. So, but the one I ended up choosing was Flash Gordon ends up getting imprisoned on Aboria, and they give him a prison tank top that happens to like be Flash Gordon colors, and it has a Flash Gordon lightning. They issued him that, right? Like, that's his prison outfit, and it's perfect. So.
They're like, he'll look good in this. Okay, Katie, what's the outfit?
I wanted to choose something from Flash Gordon because there was just so many great, weird, bizarre outfits. But I ended up, it was like they all canceled each other out. So I went with the Fire Chief's final outfit in Towering Inferno, how he has that spacesuit. It's like the big silver spacesuit, and it's full of explosives. Because he's carrying all the explosives up to blow up the water tanks, and so his spacesuit is just packed with like dynamite, I assume, or plastic explosives. So that's great.
Oh, that's good. Okay, honorable mention to, of course, Aura. It has to have an Aura one, and
Which
I really
one?
Like, well, her pink spandex.
Yeah,
where she has
with
her hair down.
Right?
And she's in pink spandex.
The backless one.
Yes.
Convenient for torture.
And then she also, but she has a belt buckle full of like these needles, and she pulls the needles out and stabs the person in the elevator.
Oh yeah,
that's great. Okay, but no, the winner is Roger Simmons, the villain of Towering Inferno. He has a burgundy coat tuxedo, and then like burgundy coat and like pants and jacket, but then he has a flesh tuxedo shirt,
with ruffles.
It's a flesh tuxedo with ruffles.
I had best outfit written in my notes next to that.
Yeah, Yeah. So, oh, that's good.
So when I saw it, I was like, this is fantastic. My band teacher in junior high used to wear something like that, except he was single. And so he would iron his like ruffle shirt, and the ruffles were always ironed flat. It was really sad.
Oh, is that what you're supposed to do with those? Yeah.
No, they're supposed to be all fluffed up, but he was just this little like single man. So he'd iron his, he had this like, it looked just like that, except it was blue, you know, the 70s tuxedo iron flat. It's great.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Katie, best name.
I went with Egon Spengler.
Ooh, my name is very similar to that. I'm just going to skip to my name because my name is Ivo Shandor. The architect.
They're similar.
Yeah, the architect of the big building who, bit of trivia, he's also the distant relative to Paul Newman's architect.
Yeah, I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
So I went with Vince Clortho. So we're all in the same movie anyway.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I like how Venkman calls everybody nicknames, and he calls them Egon Spengler. Spangs once? Hey, Spangs?
Yeah, Spangs.
And he calls them something else. I can't remember what it is. But I remember as he called him that, I was like, John, what did he just call him? Something silly. Like,
shoot, I can't remember that.
It's in my notes. I wrote it down. Keep going.
Wow, you have how many pages of notes do you have?
Well, I took some notes on some other things in life.
Okay.
Well, and I have two Flash Gordon watches. So I can't always.
Okay, no, let me know when you find it. Okay. Roy, best food.
Francine.
He does say Francine. That's right. We were so confused about that. It's like, where does that come from? See, that kind of reminds me of like when we watch Scrooged, and at the very end of Scrooged, Bill Murray inexplicably just says, "Feed me, Seymour." He was just quoting another movie.
Well, my favorite food is 35-foot Twinkie.
Oh, a 35-foot Twinkie. Very nice. Yeah.
Which only weighs 600 pounds. It seems like that'd be more, but maybe it's light and fluffy. I don't know.
A 35-foot Twinkie that weighs 600 pounds. That would be amazing. You could eat it like... It's so non-fattening. Bunch of people could just eat the Twinkie and not worry about what the Twinkie does to them. Okay. Katie, best food.
I had the ice cream sundaes that the kids eat at the top of the Towering Inferno.
Oh, that the bartender gets them?
Yeah, where they're like just been rescued from their, you know, burning apartment. And he's like, here's some ice cream sundaes.
Okay. All right. I went with Ming's power potion that he drinks before every wedding that he has.
Isn't that the roofie juice?
That's different. There's roofie juice, and then there's the power potion that it's off screen, but it's the power potion that Ming drinks before every like conquest or whatever.
I know Aura talks about it because she tells Dale that she can poison it, and Dale doesn't want to poison it.
Yes, I will get to that. We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Okay, best alien, Roy.
Oh, well, it's Ming the Merciless. He's fantastic, and I love that this movie got an actor like Max von Sydow, right? Because he does the Seventh Seal, but then he also does Flash Gordon and Strange Brew. And he's Strange so Brew. Earnest in every single one of these films. So
We talked over Christmas, everyone was talking about, well, not everyone, but you know, I've heard the internet talk so much about how, and I love Michael Caine. I love Michael Caine to death. But everyone was talking about how Michael Caine didn't phone in his performance with The Muppets Christmas Carol. But he kind of did. Yeah. He's no Max von Sydow, who plays Ming the Merciless this serious and who plays Brewmaster Smythe that serious. Yeah, that guy does not phone it in. He's so great. But that's your alien. Okay, Katie, who's your alien?
I went with Slimer, even though they never call him Slimer in the movie. Mm-hmm. Because all the ghosts are like ghosts of people. Or like spirits of people or dogs occasionally. But what is Slimer? Slimer's like...
He's a green poop, right?
Yeah. And he's got these human teeth and like, it's so weird. And it, and then he kind of became this like mascot of Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And in the cartoons, he was like their pet, you know, that with them and stuff. And
I thought that was kind of weird in the cartoon. I'm like, why are they friends with this guy?
Yeah, so I don't even know what it is. He's an alien.
I have a question about Slimer coming up. Mm-hmm. Okay, my alien, I went with honorable mention to Cletus, because what is he? He's like Skeletor from another dimension, and his eyes pop out. But I went with Aura's pet, pet sex dwarf.
I had
you better link to that song from Mark Almond, John, on the blog.
Oh yeah, okay, I'll remember to link to that.
I had a runner up as the lizard men.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Because where their faces in their mouths.
Their faces and their mouths are just solid. Like, there's no esophagus. There's nothing for food to go through.
And they're always just, like, twitchy and looking scared and weird. And I can't help but think of the actors in those suits. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, Katie, what's your best special effects?
I have one and a runner-up. I have all the Hawkman army flying in.
Okay, I have that one. Yeah.
And then slowly my other special effect. Yeah. And there's just so many of them. Like, I have this group of my hippie lady group, and we've been talking about going to the Snow Goose Festival. And I was trying to describe it to them about how many geese are in the sky that you can't. And I wanted to be like, it's like in this movie I just watched where there's all the bird, the Hawkman. There's just so many. And my other one is the Marshmallow Man. Like, I like when he's walking through the city and you see his face like over the buildings.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great.
That's really good. Okay, Roy.
The best special effect? So it's a real simple one, but I just like the books that float across the screen, and I think they're just like, they're just going across on like a clothesline, right? It's like a fish wire clothesline, but I just love it. It looks great.
I thought about putting vertically stacked books.
Vertically stacked books. No human.
No human
being
would stack
vertically stacked books.
I love the references that Dan Aykroyd comes up with. Like, oh, this is just like the symmetrical book stacking of this time. Yeah. By the way, I don't know if you guys read The Goose. We're not going to get to The Goose later, but one of the goofs it lists is Dan Aykroyd says, this is just like the Tobongo explosion of 1909. You know, that's what he says to Rick Moranis. It's like, yeah, this is just like the something to 1909. And Rick Moranis is like, it felt great. In The Goose, it says, that explosion actually happened in 1908, so it was a literal explosion that actually happened. Okay, my special effects, I like the Hawkman in flight, but also I just like that Mongo is just in the middle of a lava lamp. It's just lava lamp in the background.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Okay, Roy, best location.
The prettiest location is Arboria, but it seems like the people there are jerks. And but anyway, as long as you're on their good side, it seems pretty enough. So there you go.
Oh, Arboria. Okay, Katie?
I thought all those planet moon things sounded better than they actually looked. So I actually went with Simmons' house in San Francisco. He's got that nice big house up on the hill that overlooks the city.
Yeah, more expensive.
Probably worth millions.
One of those moons, probably.
Yeah. Cost so much as a planet.
We talked about, Katie, I don't know if now's a good time to mention, but you said you had a theory. Well, no, I'm going to mention this later. Sorry, I'm going to mention it later. Okay, my location is, okay, we don't see it on screen. It's only talked about, but I marked it as my favorite location. And, like, one of the girls says, this drink with no name that makes you not mind forgetting, it comes from where? The galaxy of pleasure. There's an entire galaxy of pleasure.
I knew you were going to say that one.
It's not a planet of pleasure. It's a galaxy of pleasure. Hundreds of billions of planets, possibly, in this galaxy of pleasure. Okay. Katie, best song.
It has to be the Flash Gordon Queen song. Although the Ghostbusters theme song is so great.
Ghostbusters theme song is okay. Personally, I like Magic by Mix Molly or whatever, you know, in the middle of Ghostbusters.
There's a lot of great songs in Ghostbusters.
In Ghostbusters, yeah. There's some Thompson twins in Ghostbusters
like
and stuff.
Cleaning up the
town.
The only reason I couldn't choose the Ghostbusters theme song is that in the credits, when you expect to hear it all, they just play like 5 seconds of it.
Yeah.
It's really annoying.
Big fail.
I'm going to go ahead and give an unpopular opinion, and John's going to strongly disagree. But so the winner isn't. It's not just that it's Flash by Queen, but Flash by Queen might be Queen's best song. So.
I love the Flash theme song, and that's where I went. That's where I went with it. But I do feel like they just didn't even give a crap about it. They just did it. But because they're Queen, it's so great. Because, you know, it's just like, you know, it's like you know, and then Flash, you know, they do the whole thing. But then when he goes in, he just earnestly sings like
just a man
with the man's courage. Yeah. Dun dun dun. And then they go back into the Flash. Okay, it's great. Of course the Ghostbusters theme song is disqualified because of its similarity to I Want a New Drug by Huey Lewis in the News. There was a lawsuit about that.
Hmm.
Okay. Roy, best guest.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go with Fred Astaire.
Okay.
Mr. Lightfeet. I don't know if that's a name anyone called him until I just barely said it, but he should have some sort of name. But anyway.
It's Mr. Lightfeet.
Yeah. Twinkle Toes? Mr. Twinkle Toes? I don't know.
No, Mr. Lightfeet.
Okay, right, it's
Katie,
official.
What do you have for guest?
I was going to choose the Die Hard cop, but we already talked about him. My runner-up is the cat, but my winner is Bobby Brady. He's great.
Oh, ooh. Bobby Brady, Mike Lookinland, the child in Towering Inferno.
This was immediately after the Brady Bunch ended, so he still looks like Bobby Brady.
I went with Larry King. Guest in Ghostbusters, yeah.
I was trying to decide between him and Casey Kasem.
And he was still old back then, apparently.
He looked a lot younger.
Yeah, he did look a lot. You know what joke I never got? Remember like how for 30 years we joked about how Larry King is really old? But like, how old was he, really? Wasn't he just a normally aged man?
He was 28 years old in Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Something like that.
He was 28?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
But he was probably like 42.
Was born old.
He was 42, but he looked like he was 70 from like hard drinking and smoking 10 packs a day or something.
That's the thing. You see someone like that that looks old, and then you're like, you have no idea how much older they're going to get.
Yeah. Okay, Katie, your best external recurring character. So
I put O.J. Simpson.
Pretty good. He was in the O.J. story. Obviously.
Oh, yeah. He was in Back to the Beach.
Oh, yeah, he was in Back to the Beach. That's right, we mentioned that when we talked about Back to the Beach.
Yes, he was my external recurring character last week, too.
This is our third O.J. Simpson movie. That's perfect, yeah. Okay, thank you for that. Roy, best external recurring character.
So I have a quick honorable mention. In Towering Inferno, there is a hotel room that has the golf clubs that I assume, because we're in San Francisco, belong to the man from What's Up, Doc? But also, in Ghostbusters, the Columbia Dean, his name is Dean Yeager, and Dean Yeager plays General Waverly in White Christmas.
The actor Dean Yeager plays General Waverly, and then the character Dean Yeager was in Ghostbusters who threw them out of Columbia.
That is a true story.
Okay. Wow. Okay, that's impressive. Good externalization. I went with the cop from Die Hard, because he was
it's
in Die Hard.
It's the same guy. It's the same character, even.
Yeah, the same guy. He's in Die Hard. He got transferred to L.A. by, you know, a few years later in Die Hard, but probably because
he got married
kid.
And had a family.
Yeah.
But yeah, Reginald Vell Johnson is his name, right? I didn't look it up. Hopefully that is the guy. I assume it's the same guy. We didn't double check that. It's the same guy. Okay.
There's
also another one. There's the violinist in Ghostbusters.
Oh, okay.
He is in Hunt for Red October.
Really? Oh, seriously. That's the one. That's what you when play? You covered
you
up.
You saw
your
me
sheets.
Looking it up.
Yeah. okay. Oh, is he let me think.
I know who
he's
is.
Not the guy who dies. Is he the guy who Ramius kills at the beginning?
I don't know. So his name's Bill Steiner.
No, isn't he the guy that like says that
so he's
like,
not Russian.
No one cares that Ramius killed the guy because he was a pig. He's that guy, right? He was a pig.
Oh, maybe that was him. But yeah, but his, anyway. If his name is Bill Steiner, then that sounds like an American guy in Hunt for October.
Yeah, well, I'm going crazy here.
I don't know. Okay, very good poll. Okay, Roy, best internal recurring character.
Okay, Larry Holt, who performed stunts for Ghostbusters and The Towering Inferno.
Oh, wow. Jumps from a
was
lot.
Was he on fire both times?
I hope so. So the crossover between those two movies, it's most of it is stuntmen. I was hoping there'd be an actor, but I couldn't find one. But anyway, Larry Holt sounds like a pretty solid name.
Yeah, does sound solid. Katie?
I went with Fireman Poles.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yeah.
There's actually not I don't think there's a fireman pole. Is there a fireman pole in Towering Inferno? I don't think it shows him going down the fireman pole.
There are a bunch of
fireman somewhere.
But Paul Newman slides down the stair railing like a fireman pole. And then Ghostbusters has a fireman pole they get really excited about and they use a bunch. And then in Flash Gordon, after he steals, when he's on Arborea and he steals the sword and he throws it away, then he slides down the vines like a fireman pole.
Oh, yeah.
And escapes into the Princess Bride fire swamp.
No, he totally does. I wonder, Steve McQueen probably eliminated the fireman poles in the fire department, you know, of San Francisco.
Well, if they go past seven
because
floors.
They're too tall. Yeah, they're too tall. He just like he flattened all the fire departments. They're all one story, probably.
I have a runner up, but I don't want to take it unless John, in case John takes it.
It's also my runner up. I think I know what it is. Go ahead with it.
It's telepathy.
Oh, that's not it. Okay, telepathy is good. Yeah,
oh, very good.
The telepathy scene. We're gonna get there. Yeah, there's the telepathy in that, and of course the telepathy in
really great telepathy scenes. Yeah, and they're like, no, the cat's in there. She's telling me in my head. Isn't like sign language? Isn't that basically telepathy?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, it's telepathy. I mean, because I can't follow what their hands are doing for sure.
Yeah.
No, this is
two really, really great telepathy scenes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're talking about the buzzing, the experiment at
the
beginning. Yeah. Okay. That's a great thing because one thing that Dr. Venkman doesn't notice in his results is, okay, he is electrocuting him every time, no matter what, and he's not electrocuting her. But one thing he doesn't notice is, like, she guesses a star, and he's like, "You're right," and she's wrong. That's not a star, but that was the previous card that he guessed wrong, that the guy guessed wrong. And so there is something happening.
Well, his actual experiment is testing negative feedback on telepathy. And if he was actually like taking results, then his experiment was working. Because the more he shocks that guy, the more the guy gets right.
Right.
So his experiment is working, but he's just not paying attention.
Because I have the DVD, I listened to the commentary a long time ago. And this is back when Harold Ramis was still alive and he's very active on the commentary. And Harold Ramis says, yeah, this scene with the electric shocks, it's based not on negative reinforcement of telepathy, but it's based on the Milgram experiment, which is testing how willing people are to give other people electric shocks.
Oh yeah, I was thinking it was like that. Because and that the, one they're in other rooms.
Yeah, they're in another room, and it's like this very unethical experiment. You cannot do this today. But yeah, in the actual experiment, they said, okay, you're going to have someone's on the other side of the room, and you're going to – and if they get the question wrong, then you administer electric shocks. And don't worry, it will take like 50 shocks to kill them or whatever. And they're like, oh, okay. And they were like, well, no one's going to actually administer the electric shocks. But like the majority of people like administered the electric shocks because a person of authority told them to administer electric shocks. And so.
Well, and in that experiment, they can't see the other person. And they tell – there's like a person with them saying, give them the shock. And when they give them the shock, they can hear the person in the other room screaming.
Yeah.
And so they're like – oh no, they're fine. Keep giving him the shock. And they're like, I don't want to. And they're like, it's fine. Give it to him. And they shock him. And then this person in the other room who's not actually getting shocked is just like screaming in pain, like they're dying. And the experiment found that everyone just kept shocking them.
Yeah. So, what a way
it's
to
It's an
introduce.
Experiment about like Nazi concentration camps and like, well, did they really, or did just people act like that when they're told to do things.
And the Milgram experiment is what introduces the hero of Ghostbusters, Dr. Venkman, who is very willingly giving people electric shocks, even when no one in authority is making him do so.
And that's in the – I like that callback in the new Ghostbusters. That's great. It's in the bonus scene.
I mean, because he gives the kid electric shocks. Even when he gets it right, he still shocks the kid. Yeah. Okay. No. My internal recurring character is the fact that the top of a building explodes, dropping some kind of fluid over the heroes of the movie.
Yeah.
In one movie, it's water fluid. In another movie, it's marshmallow fluid.
Yeah. I wrote down Towering Inferno as an internal recurring character.
Yeah. See, that's pretty good. But here's the other one. And this is. Listen to this really quick. In the Towering Inferno, and sorry, I'm going to try not to swear here, but they say at the end when they're going to do the big plan to blow the water tanks, someone yells, "Tie yourselves down, gee damn it." And then in Flash Gordon, when Dr. Zarkov is like in the rocket with Flash and Dale, he says, "For G's sakes, strap yourselves down." So very similar. Lord's name in vain and tying yourself to prevent yourself from dying. Okay. Katie, what's your best death?
The man out of the elevator on fire. When the doors open and the guy runs out completely in flames, that was great.
Okay. That is – okay, that's – I'm switching it. I'm switching mine to that because I was trying to figure out a way to work that in. That is just one of my favorite images to any movie I've seen in a long time lately, where the people who are stranded at the top, they open up the elevator and this guy runs out on fire.
Because I can't even imagine like waiting to get on an elevator and then that runs out. You'd be like, what? what is going on beneath us?
That's perfect.
The poor guy who's on fire is just waiting patiently for it to reach the right floor so he can get out.
then he just runs out. And then he just dies. Like, he's running, and then he collapses, and they look up, and they're like, oh, he's dead. And you're like, is he dead now? Like, I don't think he's dead that fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he will die from burns, but I don't think he was dead at that moment.
Roy, best death.
Well, I mean, there's like a million to choose from, right? So, the 200 people who were crushed and flooded. There's Ming the Merciless, who was impaled. There's Clytus, whose eyes and tongue popped out. There's Kala, who melts. But I'm going to go with Robert Wagner and the Flammable Man.
Right. Who runs into every fire.
I almost chose his girlfriend.
Yeah, the pantsless falling from the window.
Yeah, I just kept yelling at the screen, like, put on your pants at this point. Like, put on your pants. And then she fell out the window without them.
In a less reputable 70s movie, she would have fallen on top of Mike Lookinland, the boy, and, like, into his lap, pantsless, out the window. And then he looks up and goes, thank you. You know, like, it's like a... Like a
Is that how the lady at the beginning of Lethal Weapon dies and she like fall off and she doesn't have any pants on?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, no, that sounds familiar. Yeah, you're really good at knowing a lot of movies where pantsless women fall out of buildings.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I am good at that.
Yeah. I went with, okay, honorable mention to Slimer, because this is a question I have.
What?
Because is Slimer a human, and did he die from just eating too many hot dogs or something?
Oh. And that's like what his soul looks like? He died from food poisoning
or something? I don't know.
Yeah, that's why he's always eating. It's like one of those like ironic hell punishment things, but he's living
it. That's the soul of a glutton?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Good question.
Okay, but my actual best death is Munson. Just run over by Flash Gordon in an airplane.
Yep.
And no one even cares. They never even mention it.
No one cares about that guy.
I don't think Flash even knew that he ran over a guy.
Okay, Katie, best villain?
Well, you know, the obvious answer is Ming, but I put Simmons, the electrician, because the other villains, they're like having a good time with it, and mm-hmm. Simmons is just villainous. Like
he's just the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not even cool about it.
Yeah, he's not cool. No, I agree. I went with that one too. My honorable mention, of course, was Fire. Roy, best villain?
Yeah, I'm going to have to switch to my other headphones because I think my AirPods are dying. Before I do that, I thought I would tell you that it's definitely Simmons. Although honorable mention to San Francisco's building code, which is so horrible that when you build to code, buildings burn down.
Yeah, you build to code and the code executes people.
Yep.
My runner-up was the Marshmallow Man, just because he's such a fun villain.
That's good, yeah. He's got such a pleasant face, but so sinister.
Yeah, and his death is just so, like, delicious, probably.
Yeah, that looked good. All right, Roy, best hero.
Okay, it's a man who's got nothing but man's courage. He saved the earth.
He's pretty good. He's good.
Pretty good.
Okay, Katie, best hero.
I put Paul Newman because I like that he did his own stunts. But I also, I think it's almost tied with Aura.
Aura. Okay. Yeah, why is Aura a hero?
She saves all these people, and she never really does it intentionally. All these other people are trying to save the world or trying to save the building or the planet, and Aura is just saving people to like for her own pleasure later. Yeah, she's like, I saved your life, come on. And
she gets the award for the most blatant quid pro quo.
Yeah, and if she hadn't, I mean, she was Flash's only hope, really.
Yeah,
she saved him multiple times.
Very good. Okay, I like that. Okay, you guys are going to be surprised that I don't pick Flash Gordon. But my honorable mention is actually Han Zarkov. I mean, you got to respect a man who takes on a galactic empire by just launching into a rocket with a single pistol, and that's what he's going to do. He's like, I'm going to stop this empire with my one gun. And my his plan was his unwilling assistant to help him out. But
yep.
So good for Han Zarkov. I like where your head's at. But my actual award is to Lewis Tully, Rick Moranis, who climbed out of their giant building to disconnect Dana's television set. That's how much of a hero Lewis Tully is, that he didn't want the super getting mad at his neighbor. So he went out on the ledge to disconnect her TV. So that's a hero in my book.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought in the end he just turned up his TV really loud so they couldn't tell the difference.
He ultimately gave up on going out on the ledge. But he started. He's kind of a hero for just turning up his TV really loud.
He's definitely a hero at that party where he's like, let's dance and see if other people join in.
That's he's a party hero. Hero he's right a there. Hero for inviting clients instead of friends.
Yep.
Okay, Katie, best goof.
Okay, we talked about almost all of mine, like the Ghostbusters timeline and Zarkov's memories and the EPA being a serious. But I have one more. So when they land Zarkov's rocket, when they first get to Mongo, then they're sitting in there and they wake up and there's soldiers, like the big gold soldiers, they come and it shows them looking in the windows But then it goes to the next scene, and the soldiers are really far, still walking up to the spaceship.
Good continuity error. Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Roy, error, goof?
Sure. So when the Ghostbusters show up at Dana's apartment, it's broad daylight. When they get to the top, it's night. And when they get back down to the bottom, it's broad daylight again. And I thought maybe the clouds just make it dark. But no, the clouds dissipate, and it's still, like, really dark at the top of the building. So I assume the stairs take like 7 hours to climb both up and down. Otherwise, they just filmed all of the New York City street side stuff during the day, and they wanted it to be night at the top of the building for drama, and they just didn't care.
No, that's good. Also, Dana has different clothes at the bottom, so she went to, like, she got a robe somewhere. Yeah. Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah, because we talked about, well, because we did the same thing. We talked about, like, because Katie, you said, hey, it's daytime again. I'm like, oh, and then you said, well, maybe it was just the weird cloud at the top. But yeah, we weren't looking for that, so.
That discontinuity, I always call it the, what's the Halloween movie where they did that? The Mexican one.
The Santo versus the Monster?
Santo?
Yeah, I call it Santo timing.
Because we were all complaining about
Santo nighttime.
Yeah, we were complaining about the nighttime in Santo. It's day again. Okay, my goof is... Okay, I have a couple. In Towering Inferno, it shows an explosion in Towering Inferno, and then in the explosion cuts back, like the frame cuts back. Like they did a loop, but it was a big cut in it. And then... I went on the big thing that Lewis is, at the very beginning of the movie, Lewis is having a party on Thursday, and so it was coming up, and then Thursday was also the event when they get possessed by the dogs and Gozer comes and everything, but then there's a two-week period where Winston and Janine talk about working, and there's the whole middle part of Ghostbusters where they're on magazine covers and everything, so that did not happen within 2 days. And then also... when the helicopter drops Steve McQueen on top of the elevator, the rope is just dangling right next to the building. Yep. And that would mean the helicopter is just, its rotors are going into the building itself. So, yeah.
Also, with that helicopter, they can't, like, when they're going to take the basket of people, they can only take 10 people. But then when they take the elevator has 12 people plus the firemen. But they can lift it, so their weight thing is off.
So there's the other helicopter that bursts into flames when its landing gear touches the side of the building.
Maybe there are different elevators, because that was the elevator that can only take 10 people. So maybe they got a better elevator, or helicopter, I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, Roy, best LOL moment.
Okay, so for me, it's a scene in Flash Gordon. It's the telepathy scene, and the funniest part for me, where I just can't stop laughing, is every time Flash says "over."
Yeah, he says "over" in his thoughts.
Yep.
Yes. Okay, that's perfect. Okay, Katie, LOL.
I put every time that Dale cheers for Flash.
Oh, so man. Great.
Like, go Flash, go. And then when she's running away at the end, go Flash. And she runs off.
Yeah.
I think there's a third one, but I can't remember what it is. I don't even know which is my favorite. Just every time she cheers for him, it's great.
She does the cheering motions where she, like, she puts her elbows behind herself, like in the cheerleading motion. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the last one where she's like running to hide and she gets like, go Flash on the way out.
Just like almost a side comment as she's fleeing for her life.
Yeah, like, see you later. Go Flash.
Okay, I mentioned it already, but when Zarkov and Baron are in prison and Baron says, tell me more about this Houdini, I really like that scene. But also the sequence of events where Baron and Aura and Zarkov are running through the palace and Baron says, the code's changed. And then Aura says, I've changed too. And he's like, let's run away together. And she's like, oh, Baron. And then she turns away and he goes, you haven't changed. And then Zarkov says, I knew the code was one of the prime numbers of the Zeman series. I haven't changed.
I like that
scene. Okay, Katie, best WTH moment.
Well, I was going to be when the EPA shows up in a suit.
That's pretty good.
But I went with, oh, I have two. When Dale does a one-handed cartwheel.
Yes. Oh, that's a good one. That's so good. Yeah.
And then on a more serious one, when the good lady falls out the scenic elevator.
Yes.
You really think that she's going to survive. Yeah. And then she falls out and you're like, oh. Out.
That's a bummer. Yeah.
I thought for sure she was going to make it.
Okay. Roy, any others?
Yeah, I'm going to say Dale's speech where Ara is trying to free her and she says, I can't. I gave Ming my word.
To that try just to makes be a me good so wife. Mad.
She won't try to escape because she promised him that she'd be a good wife.
Yes. I'm saving that for later. I'm going to bring that up. Okay. We already talked about my two, and one is the Dan Aykroyd dream sequence where the ghost takes his pants off, and then also the guy running out of the elevator on fire up at the top floor.
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay. Roy, best scene.
Okay. I almost picked the scene at the very end of Flash Gordon. He jumps for joy. But I probably got to go with the finale, the Ghostbusters finale, as they take down Gozer.
Okay.
Pretty that whole scene at the top of the skyscraper. Yep.
That's pretty good. That's good. That's very classic stuff. Katie?
Yep.
I went with the Flash Gordon telepathy scene. Because I watched it twice, you know, in a row, and I laughed harder at it the second time than I even did the first time. Just every single, like, I couldn't choose it as a quote because it was just every single line, like how he says over, and then he's like, I'm talking to you through telepathy, through your mind. And then he's like, just fake him out. It's been done to me. Just hilarious.
Girls and know then I how, love- Dale.
Girls know how.
And then I love at the very end where she's like, someone's here, hang up. Like, hang up what? hang up your brain. And then she says, we have to stop thinking to each other. Like, the other people are going to hear him or something.
Yeah.
So I thought. And yeah. Then the whole thing about like, oh man, this girl's really turning me on. And she's like, what? And he's like, never mind. It wasn't about you.
Yeah.
It was just.
What? So, yeah. All right.
The whole thing is so great.
Well, Katie, that's why you're my favorite person, because that was my scene as well. The thought amplifier in Flash is one of my favorite scenes in cinema history.
It's like every sentence in it is so great.
It's great.
You can't choose.
Okay. Roy, best actor.
Okay, this might be a bit of a surprise, but this guy gave his heart and soul to this film, so I'm going to go with Topol.
Topol. Okay.
As Dr. Zarkov. Yeah, I think he's great.
Yeah, my favorite Topol line is when they test to make sure he's properly brainwashed, and he says, yeah. What's your name? Han Zarkov. I mean Agent Zarkov! Yeah. okay, Katie, best actor.
I went with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Because I think you could replace any actor in any of these movies and it would still be just as good, except for Bill Murray.
That's a really good criterion. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
I think half his lines had to have been, like, improv'd.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Okay, well, that's a really good choice, but I always pick this person whenever he's in any of these movies, so I'm going to go with Max von Sydow as Ming. And we already talked about how he gives it his all. Even when he's in Flash Gordon and Strange Brew, for Glade Out Loud. Okay, now, questions. I still have several questions. Katie, do you have any more questions?
Have you done all the awards?
There's still more.
No, John, okay. John has plenty of order of doing this.
Yeah, okay. Order, yeah. All right. Well, my questions are on my next page, just to make sure. I have questions. Let's see. Does the tall girl in the party just fall off the balcony?
Yeah, she dies.
Does she?
I think so. She jumps out the window when the dog comes in. I always assumed she died, which makes me. Oh.
The one that's about to leave, and then Lewis.
Yeah, yeah,
like Lewis shouldn't have talked her into dancing because she would have survived if she left.
I had a bunch of questions. We already answered most of them, except for these three. Does the mayor have a Catholic cardinal on call in his office?
He's just a couple doors down.
Like, did he just, yeah. Is he on staff?
I suppose the main parish or whatever is near City Hall? Maybe?
I don't know.
Maybe? I don't know. Yeah, that's all my questions. I'm not going to ask the last one.
Okay, Roy?
Okay, so Flash Gordon has a limited amount of time before the Earth crashes into the surface of the moon. And he just barely makes it, right? Like, time-wise, he just barely makes it.
Right, so the moon is nearly touching the Earth.
The moon is within, like, a couple hundred yards of the Earth when Flash Gordon wins.
Yeah.
So the Earth is destroyed.
No, it's just 100 yards away from the Earth.
It is complete chaos.
Okay.
Well, I thought it was... There was this much time until the moon completely breaks up, and then hot hails all over the Earth.
Hot hails.
I think hail was its own thing because it had its own button.
that's a goof that I have. That's something that's kind of bothered me about Flash Gordon for a long time because Ming pushes the hot hail button, but then when the hot hail lands in Zarkov's lab, they pick it up and it's like, oh, this is moon rock because the moon is out of orbit because of something else. So it's kind of like, it's almost like hot hail is a code word for like the last step in the invasion, maybe, but it's actually destroying the moon, kind of.
So I can see where it's possible that maybe like 14 hours is the time he has before it's the point of no return, but it also seems to me that if the moon is already out of its orbit, I'm not sure that the moon is just naturally going to work itself back to its orbit. So anyway,
the moon going out of orbit would be like tides and all kinds of stuff would be messed up.
I'm concerned that when Flash Gordon...
It's 14 hours until we notice the moon is out of orbit. Maybe that's what it is.
I think when Flash Gordon gets back to the Earth, he's in for a surprise. I think the Earth's in trouble.
But who knows? At the end, when Ming is like, oh, you can have your own kingdom, and then he's like, well, you could have the Earthlings. They'll be really... you know, docile after all the earthquakes and everything. I think he's talking about the current state of Earth. Like, oh, these people are going to be messed up now because of what we've done to them. I don't think that's like a threat. I think that's... You could do this really easy with how Earth is now.
So I suppose Flash Gordon really does have a set of slaves now. Like,
cause, if he makes it back to Earth.
If he makes it back to Earth.
Oh, like, that was my question. Do they ever make it back to Earth?
Right, because they don't have a way back. That's a good point.
And they're like, you can stay. We like you. And they're like, maybe. Well, she's like, no, I want to go to New York City.
I'm a New York City girl.
This place is too quiet for me. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions, Roy?
Nope.
Okay. First of all, at the beginning of Ghostbusters, when Bill Murray says to Egon, he's like, no, you've earned it, you know. What did Egon earn? What was that thing that Bill Murray gives to Egon?
It's a candy bar. Is it a payday? I'm trying to tell by the colors.
Maybe.
I thought it was the white wrapper with orange lettering. It looks like a payday to me, but I could be wrong.
It's a payday. Okay, no, that's good. Okay, he's earned it. I always thought he was giving him back his calculator.
But it's not. When they're getting the library ghost, and he's like, so what are we going to do? And he smacks the calculator out of Egon's hand.
Yeah, I do love that.
Stop that. Yeah.
Okay, next question, also Ghostbusters. What is a giant slore?
That was one of my questions.
Is it different than a tor? And is a tor not as bad as a slore? I don't know.
Slore sounds worse somehow.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we'll never know.
Well, we know that Shubs and Zools get roasted in the belly of the slore, though.
The belly of slore. So a slore is better than a Zool. And it's probably larger than a Zool, so it's probably like a bigger lizard. Maybe it's like something prehistoric, like a T-Rex type thing.
Okay, so there's a Ghostbusters fandom website that says slores are large reptilian beasts from another world.
Okay.
Yeah. I wrote Ghostbusters, down what is a slore, but I can't remember like what the question even meant. So on the Ghostbusters trivia, it says that that's a Nestle Crunch bar.
Oh, really?
Right, very good.
Oh, cool.
So okay. Good job, John.
Why is that? Okay, so my next question is, where is Mongo, and how does it work as a planet with its moons?
So that's a good question. I know you basically have to go through a wormhole to get there, right? Because the rocket goes through like this. So I don't know.
And the planet and the moons are inside a lava lamp.
And some of the moons, like where the Hawkmen live, it's just like a big palace with rockets on the bottom.
Yeah. So it's like Bespin up there. But they also talk about how they can float down to Arborea because it's 5 miles down. So the moons are 5 miles away from each other.
I thought it was 50 miles.
Oh.
Is it 5 miles?
I thought it was 5 miles. It could be 50 miles. But in either case, a moon's 50 miles away from each other probably wouldn't work.
No.
Now, Katie, because you had a great theory on this, right? That they weren't so much, they were moons, but also the air on Mongo has a viscosity kind of close to
water. Yeah, I was saying
water,
like the whole
right?
planet is like a gas planet, and that the moons are like continents in the gas planet.
Yeah.
So they're sort of like if you were really far away, you'd see like a big circle, and then the continents would be like Mongo, Arborea, Hawk Land.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the black people live.
I like that. Yeah, wherever they are. The gold, the blue blooded black people, yeah.
Yeah, they have this whole thing where they unite all the breeds of people, which I still think is super weird that they call them breeds. but it's really just the Hawk people, the one guy, James Bond from Arborea, and then nobody else.
Yep. But
the gold African guys don't show up. No other Arborean people. The lizard people don't join them. None of those like rainbow midgets.
Right. That's the harrowing thing that we didn't see. That on the way to kill Ming, like they took like Rocket Ajax and the Hawkmen and the rocket cycle and everything, and they just blew all the other worlds away. They're like, yeah, we're just gonna kill all these people because they're on the way to Ming.
Yeah.
Okay, and also in Towering Inferno, when the helicopter lands on the roof, why does it just blow up?
It was made by the Pinto helicopter company.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The gas tank at the wrong spot.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Okay, those are all my questions. Okay, Katie, your favorite line?
I really like in Flash Gordon when they're erasing Zarkov's brain and he says, "My mind is all I have. I spent my whole life trying to fill it." Like, I laughed when I watched it, but then I sat and thought about that line a lot where I'm like, oh, that is like what your life is. Like, mm-hmm. You spend your whole life trying to fill your mind. But I think in the end, I think I have to go with those lines from Peter Venkman.
Dick
where
Lassier?
He says, I wrote that down, but no, I wrote human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Mass hysteria.
I always think about that. Yeah, dogs and cats living together.
So great. Because previously, like, each one of them lists off, like, oceans boiling, like, no sun, no sun. He tops it with human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. So great.
Okay, Roy, best line.
Okay, so there's a million great lines in Flash Gordon, but the line from any of these movies that just tickles me every time I hear it is from Ghostbusters, and it's, "Who does your taxes?"
We're the Ghostbusters, who does your taxes?
No, so it's Lewis that says it, right?
Lewis says it,
no, yeah. You got it right, yeah.
Well, Dan Aykroyd says we're the Ghostbusters. Lewis says, "Who does your taxes?" Yes.
Who does your taxes? Yeah, I love it.
that's really good. My honorable mention in Towering Inferno, when they have to rappel down like all 81 floors or something, and one of the firemen says, "I can't rappel down that far. I'll fall." And then Steve McQueen says, "Well, you better go first then, so you don't hit us on the way down." That's just a great line that, you know, is perfect for someone like Steve McQueen. But one of my very favorite lines ever in anything is the scene that we talked about so much, but it's the scene where Aura says, put this poison in Ming's power potion and kill him, you know, and Dale says, I can't do that, and she says, Ming has never kept his word in your life, you know, why shouldn't you do it? And then Dale says, and I quote, keeping our word is one of the things that make us better than you. Which is one of my all-time favorite lines, because, and it's so funny, because, you know, you watch Star Trek, you watch all these science fiction movies, I don't know what it is that we as human beings, where we think that we're more honorable than any aliens out there, and we just assume that. We're better because we're humans. And, yeah, it's just one of my very favorites. Okay. Okay, Roy, are you ready for your taglines? Pick your favorite tagline and then your new taglines.
Okay, my favorite tagline is from Blazing Inferno, and it's, tonight with Telly Savalas, one tiny spark becomes a night of blazing suspense.
Yes, yes.
And, yeah.
With Telly Savalas.
Okay. With Telly Savalas.
Okay, what are your other ones?
Oh, yeah, my alternates. Okay, the Towering Inferno. They've come to party above the seventh floor. Flash Gordon, this one's... I phoned this one in. Flash Gordon, he only has 14 hours to save Earth. Ghostbusters, don't watch if you are menstruating. It's science.
Perfect. Okay, very nice. Okay, Katie, your favorite tagline that exists and your new taglines.
My favorite was Flash Gordon. And my taglines are, let's see, Towering Inferno.
What's the Flash Gordon tagline? Which one is
it? I don't know. I didn't write it down. Don't
it's
you?
Pitiful humans. Who will save you now?
That's it. Right. Yes, that's good.
Yeah. Okay, so my Flash Gordon new one is, watch as the quarterback becomes a legitimate hero. I also had How to Save the Earth and Plan a Family all at once.
That's good.
Ghostbusters, like a dustbuster, but for ghosts.
Nice.
Towering Inferno, if you want to see a mild 9/11 movie, but without the crushing knowledge of it being a movie about real events.
It's funny, after we watch Towering Inferno, we're like, you know, it's kind of weird that they make this big PSA in there about how we shouldn't build skyscrapers because, you know, they're fire traps. And Katie and I were talking about, like, hey, the only fire, you know, the only skyscraper fire that we were aware of was 9/11, so we did a Google search for skyscraper fires, and it was horrifying.
Oh,
they do
so
actually
many.
Exist. Yeah, there are lots of fires in skyscrapers, and it's terrifying.
Wow.
And, yeah, a lot of people die. Like, yeah. Over 200.
Yeah. Okay, for my taglines, I picked, yeah, from Towering Inferno, one tiny spark becomes a night of blazing suspense. And then for...
In the Players Club. Sorry. Yeah.
Telly, you know, I'm... In the coming years, I'm going to remember Telly Savalas in the Towering Inferno. It's just going to be part of the Towering Inferno. It's going to be one of those men.
Even while we were talking, I was looking up some other of the actors on my phone, and one was in a movie with Telly Savalas. I'm like, oh, there's another. I was like, oh, wait, no. Nope, he wasn't in it. They just talked about it.
Telly Savalas.
Okay, so I messed around with a couple of Towering Inferno taglines. One is 81 stories or 120 stories of flame, but these are the stories of the 120 people in some. Anyway, I couldn't make that happen.
Yeah.
Also, I couldn't make happen an inferno is bad enough on the ground, .. But what I did make happen is find out who's cooler when the heat's on. Paul Newman,
ooh.
Steve McQueen. Okay.
I had a fire at the men's only Oscar party.
Wow, man, you had tons of these. Very good. My tagline for Flash Gordon is, he can't make the AFC playoffs, but he sure can save the world. Then for Ghostbusters, I have, these guys make sure everyone gets to die twice.
My Ghostbusters tagline about Dustbusters was, because that was one of the questions I didn't ask, was Ghostbusters, like, who came up with that name? Was it inspired by Dustbusters? Because it's kind of a silly name. It's like one of those ones where you think about it and you're like, walkie-talkie, this is a stupid name. You know, like Ghostbusters. Like, that's a...
I never thought
about it. It's kind of silly.
It is kind of silly. I wonder if there was something like... Did they have, like, exterminators in the 80s? Like, Ratbusters or something? Like, maybe it comes from something like that. But
maybe someone's mom was just... Had a Dustbuster and she made a bunch of funny jokes with it. Like, oh, there's a monster under my bed. Oh, this is the Monster Buster. I'll get it out and go back to sleep.
See, yeah.
They made a movie about it.
Because I assumed they wrote this line later, after they came up with Ghostbusters, but maybe it came from the line, because in the beginning of Ghostbusters, Ray says, you know, with this technology, we could really bust some heads in a spiritual sense.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So maybe it came from that. I don't
know. You know, Dustbusters were a big deal in the early 80s. Like, it was the new cool thing, Dustbusters.
Yeah.
We had several.
Dustbusters, yeah. And-
You had, like, the one that, like, clicked on your wall.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
Okay, titular line. Katie, do you have a titular line?
Yeah, I was going to make up one about, you know, Towering Infernos and Ghostbusters. But it's a real one, and it's when Dana is talking to her mom on the phone, and she's like, I got to go. I have a date. Because I just related to this conversation so much. Dating, like, so many different people. It's like, oh, what do they do? And she's like, he's a Ghostbuster. And I was like, wow, that's impressive that she just said it. I would have been like, you know, I don't know. I'll tell you later.
Like she says to her violinist boyfriend, oh, he's a scientist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if I would have said that to my mother, I would have been like, he's a scientist. I wouldn't have just outed him as a Ghostbuster right away. But she's like, yeah, the guy's on TV, he's a Ghostbuster. And I felt that awkwardness personally.
I see.
So that was my favorite.
Good line, Roy.
So a tiny bit of editing, but I'm gonna go with long live Flash Gordon. You've saved your Earth. Have a nice day.
That's pretty good. Okay, I just went with Flash Gordon, New York Jets, which you've mentioned several times.
Although I do love the line from Volton when he says, Flash Gordon's alive?
Yes. Remember when Volton said that in Dark Knight? When it turns out Commissioner Gordon was alive and Volton says, Gordon's alive! Okay. Special awards. Okay, of all the people who warn people of things, who was the most convincing? Best warner, we should say. Roy?
I'm going to go with, is it Chief O'Halloran, played by Steve McQueen?
Oh, good. He's a good warner.
I don't think you messed with him, yeah.
Okay. All right, Katie?
I went with Ghostbusters. I love when Egon's like, turning it off would be like dropping a bomb on the city. And then Bankman says, my friend, don't be a jerk.
Yeah. that's pretty good.
Why didn't that work?
It should have worked.
I don't know. I mean, it's like, if I was that just electrician guy, I would, he was so terrified. I think he came the closest to it working. Like,
yeah,
the other people were like, nah, nah, nah. And that guy was like, I really don't want to do this. I also like when the EPA guy says, if he does that again, you can shoot him. That was in response to my friend, don't be a jerk.
That's whenever I think of the EPA, I always think of how, you know, just how just ready to shoot people the EPA is.
Yeah, they are, man.
They got to eliminate, you know, population on Earth, you know, for environmental reasons. I actually went with Paul Newman because I feel like he canceled his whole vacation to get on the horn and just warn everybody. He didn't, well, you know, and Steve McQueen didn't ultimately believe him, but I picked him, even though you guys make a convincing argument for that Ghostbuster scene, because I was just kind of thinking of when Peter Venkman just brushes Peck off, but no, I should have thought of the other scene.
I like it, too, because when they go to turn it off, they start, like, running up the stairs, which to me would be like, okay, no, let's not do that.
Okay, so now it gets tricky. Roy, help me out here. So let's go best, worst. What's your best and worst alternate outcome? Now, this is if the warnings are heeded, right?
I went with the Ghostbusters because I think there's two things. I think inevitably Okay, the containment unit's going to fail because the wiring is really substandard in that building, right? When they bought the building, they said the wiring was really bad.
Yes.
But also,
it's not seven stories.
That's true. But I also feel like the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper are going to hook up eventually, and that's all they're waiting for, right? So I think that if the warning had been heeded in Ghostbusters, it just would have delayed the inevitable. So the other, because they talked about how like their containment unit was maxed out, right? Like,
yes.
And so
that was before anyway. The EPA came along, so they were in trouble already.
Yeah. So I think in the Towering Inferno, if all the warnings have been heeded, then no one dies. So that's probably the best possible alternate outcome. But I do want to discuss, if Dr. Zarkov hadn't noticed Ming, then the Earth would have been spared, if you take Ming at his word, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I think the 200 people who got crushed and drowned would have survived if everyone had heeded everyone's warnings. And I think the warning in Ghostbusters probably just was a delay.
Okay. Okay, good. Good reasoning. That's mostly what I have. Katie, what do you have?
That's mostly what I have. I think if they... The same thing with the Ghostbusters. I think at the very worst, it would have delayed it till the 2021 Ghostbusters story.
Yeah.
And they would have just been hanging out as like dogs the whole time. The Towering Inferno, I think like at any point, if any of those warnings had been listened to, like if they didn't hold the party until the safety checks were done.
Yeah.
If they had, you know, then the sprinklers would have gone off, even if the fire had still started. If they had followed the stuff, Simmons, you know, could have been exposed, and then they would have fixed the wiring, and then the building would be fine. If they had gotten, like, evacuated right at the beginning, everybody would be okay, you know.
Yeah.
At any point, they could have saved it.
Yeah. Totally. Okay. So if Paul Newman... If people listened to Paul Newman, then the party just would have, then they could have contained it and everything would have been fine. I say that. Okay, but what if the worst would be if everyone listened to Zarkov, there is an alien invasion attacking Earth and they listened to him, what would they have done? They would have taken the space shuttle up and then Ming would have just wiped out the space shuttle. And so then it would have been more disastrous, right? Like what would Earth have done?
So I wonder if like they had sent like a small army up to fight Ming, would that have been sufficient? Because Flash Gordon defeats Ming basically by himself. So I don't know. It's hard
but
to say.
Yeah, but does that army have a man's courage?
They don't, John.
And does it have Dale Arden to distract him?
Yeah, he needed that kind of distraction. Yeah, and they needed... Does the army know? Do they know Beatles songs to prevent themselves from being brainwashed?
The Beatles saved Dr. Zarkov, so there's a hero for you.
A testament to how catchy their lyrics are.
Yeah.
You cannot erase them from your mind.
Yeah. Okay, Roy, now alternate warnings. What should the warnings have been for each movie? Go ahead.
So Paul Newman, he should have said, Duncan, you move your party below the 8th floor, or I will kill Robert Wagner. Now, in Flash Gordon, if Dr. Zarkov, speaking to the conservative scientists, had said, I promise this isn't being caused by global warming, then they would have taken him seriously because, you know, they don't have to deal with that whole global warming hoax, right?
Right.
So, Ghostbusters, if you flip that switch, I will build 10 coal plants and sell snow leopard pajamas. Because, you know, he's the EPA guy. He doesn't want that. So.
Okay. Those are good warnings. Okay, Katie?
I only wrote one. I don't write one for each movie. I wrote for the Towering Inferno. I think the fire chief should have gone upstairs himself and just evacuated the floor.
Yeah.
So he goes up there and he says, you guys got to leave, right? And then instead of watching them leave, he, like, turns back around and goes down the elevator.
That's only then, after Paul Newman calls and they said no.
Yeah.
Like if they get there and they go up to the top and they're just like, we're evacuating everybody out.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. But he doesn't stick around to make sure they evacuate. I'm trying to remember.
And he doesn't look as believable because he takes off his fire outfit and goes in a shirt and tie.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he should have worn his fire. That should have been the difference. He should have also been in his fire marshal.
That's his authority.
Yeah.
If he had escorted the fire up the elevator with him to show the people that it was serious.
No, he should have worn his space suit full of explosives and be like, you're going to get off here or I'm blowing this place up. Or I'm blowing it up in like 6 hours.
He should have taken them hostage before the fire took them hostage.
Yeah.
Okay. These are my new warnings. OJ should have made a phone call with the warning, hey, we got to clean up all the oily rags in the building. Just pick up all the oily rags. For Flash Gordon, the alt warning should have been Zarkov should have just strenuously warned people that everything is okay and there's no alien invasion at all in outer space.
Yeah, stop worrying. There's nothing to worry about.
There's
just
nothing to worry about because then Ming won't bother us. Yeah.
Yep.
And then alt warning for Ghostbusters is Peck should have listened to Bill Murray and then he should have gone to the mayor and the governor of New York to enable more power grid to go to the Ghostbusters headquarters so that he could maintain the containment grid.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. All right. Let's rank these suckers. Roy, third
Let's
favorite.
Do it. I loved every single movie. My third favorite was The Towering Inferno.
Yes. Katie?
Same.
I thought The Towering Inferno was my third favorite. Yes, I agree. And my second favorite, I do have a lot of questions about the afterlife and the reason for ghosts, but Ghostbusters is my second favorite, as you all know, because, you know, I already said what my favorite movie ever is. Roy, what's your second favorite?
So on Facebook, everyone who voted for their favorite of these three voted for Ghostbusters.
That's true.
And it's only because you haven't seen Flash Gordon recently, so Ghostbusters is great, but it's the second best.
Good for you. All right. Katie, it's fine if you like Ghostbusters more than Flash Gordon, but what's your second favorite?
I want to choose Flash Gordon as my favorite because you're my favorite, but I really like Flash. I really like Ghostbusters the best, so number two is Flash Gordon.
Ghostbusters is a classic. I don't blame you, but I'm really glad
I liked it so much more than I expected to.
That's
so much
really,
more.
That's the best news I've heard this week.
The fact that it came close is a compliment.
Awesome. Well, Flash Gordon is a very favorite of mine and Roy's. It brings back many memories. It's like Flash Gordon is kind of like our Big Wednesday, I suppose, because we used to watch it in high school all the time. So So
it was on my short list of movies to choose last podcast.
Yep. Nice, I can smell my basement where we used to watch Flash Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah, it smells like your wet dog.
All right. Well, if you want to do the numbers, The Towering Inferno cost $14 million. It made $116 million. So good for them.
Amazing.
Flash Gordon cost $20 million and made $27 million. Ghostbusters cost $30 million and it made $300 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Gosh, Flash Gordon was, I guess it made money, but it's like came nowhere near to $100 million. The other two were like massive blockbusters, but Flash Gordon was just kind of just a minor hit of 1980, I guess.
I imagine Ghostbusters is the one that's still making the most money today.
Yeah. Too. So if we're talking Rotten Tomatoes scores, Flash Gordon is an 83%, which kind of surprises
that's
me.
That's surprising.
Ghostbusters is 97%. Wow. Which is that's pretty good. And then The Towering Inferno, 70%, but that's just fine.
Yeah, it's all very respectable. That's very good. Good movies. Yeah.
It missed the 6% bump that would have occurred had Telly Savalas been in the cast.
Yeah.
What can you do?
I guess that's our studio notes, as they say. Like, why isn't Telly Savalas in Towering Inferno?
I would think that Towering Inferno costs more because they make this big deal about how it was the first movie where two movie studios came together to make a movie so they could make it better with a bigger budget.
Mm.
I expected that number to be higher.
Well, let's see. $14 million, 1974. That's a lot of money.
I guess.
I mean, yeah, I don't know what the 74. Yeah, I guess 14. Yeah, I can never. I don't. I can never figure those out. I guess when did things? Was it the '80s when things really exponentially went up? That it was, they were almost close today. You know, because like a $30 million movie in the 1980s was pretty big. And I remember when True Lies came out, it was the first $100 million movie, and that was a really big deal. And that was what? That was like 1990 something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know how money works. I always have a hard time.
So let's see. Towering Inferno cost $14 million in 1974. So 14.
Is that an inflation
calculator? Yeah, we'll
see,
do it.
I never trust inflation calculators, because remember your Macintosh that you used to have that we used to play Dark Tower on?
Yeah.
I remember those Macintoshes in the 1980s cost $2,000. And so, a Macintosh today, like a really nice Macintosh, costs $2,000 today.
How did my dad ever talk my mom into buying a Macintosh? Like, it's going to cost how much? What does it do? It plays Dark Towers? Okay. So anyway, that's 14 million today would be 80 million. So it's an $80 million budget for a movie today.
That's...
Yeah, think of all those movie stars, how much you'd have to pay them now.
Yeah.
And all those special effects. That seems crazy.
For two studios, yeah. that's a deal, because like $80 million today is like not a lot of money to spend on a big,
not at all,
giant movie like The Towering Inferno, yeah.
And to put like a dozen of the top stars at a time in.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's like The Eternals.
Okay. All right, are you guys ready for some future business?
All right, let's do future business, yeah.
Let's see if we can get Eric on the line.
Oh, do you want to call him right now? Okay. Eric.
Hello.
Hello, Eric Kimry. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing great. Welcome to the Yours, Mine, and Theirs podcast. So I John and Katie, I don't know what you know, but I've met Eric. He was in the Army when I was at language school. And Eric, I just want to say my favorite memory of you was when – I think you found like a reg in the Army about hair length, and you started growing your hair straight upwards like a kid in play.
Yes. Well, and the best part was, you know, we had those kind of – it's like a baseball cap, but it's square. And so it fit perfectly on top, so it looked normal. And then as soon as I took it off, it looked like I had a hair hat on top of my head. It was great.
Oh, this reminds me of bending the rules at BYU, sticking my hair up. I did that. So,
all right,
Eric. Wait, you associate with this Air Force guy? That's weird.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were all in the same class going through the whole process, so we were, you know, what, a good almost 2 years together in class. So we spent a lot of time together.
Fun,
Eric. Where are you living these days?
I am in Boise, Idaho.
Oh wow! I assume you're out of the military.
Yes. Yep, for a long time.
Well, good for you. I'm finally out myself. It's nice being a civilian puke. But right, sir.
All right.
You are going to give us three movies. I'm very excited.
All right. So my three movies. My first one was a very easy choice for me. It was the first one I thought of when I had to come up with movies that I wanted everybody to watch, and it is Life of Pi from 2012, directed by Ang Lee. I don't think that one's come up yet, has it?
It has not.
Okay, perfect.
Very nice.
So I am looking forward to that one. My next one is from 2001, and it is directed by and starring Bill Paxton, and it is Frailty. Yes.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's crazy.
Have either of you guys seen that one?
I don't think I have.
I have seen it, and like I when I saw Frailty, I'm like, wow, this is just like Life of Pi.
Yeah, oh yeah. Almost a remake, yeah.
Huh.
So my third one was a little tougher. I had it kind of bounced around between a bunch of different ones. I was going to do Lord of the Rings, But I feel like everybody's seen that wants to. So at this point, there's you know, even people that haven't seen it kind of know what happens in it anyway. So yeah. I don't know how much value that brings to exposing people to that. So I picked a little deeper cut, a foreign film from 2011, Headhunters. Have either of you seen that?
I'm stumped.
I have not,
man.
John.
Yeah, no, I don't know this good. At all.
Oh, good.
What year was that again?
2011. Yeah, when you search it, there's a couple different ones that are called Headhunters. So 2011, it's a Norwegian film. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorite countries is Norwegia.
Yes.
Huh. Oh, my goodness. Look how Norwegian this looks.
Oh, yeah, super Norwegian. Yeah, I didn't dare try to say the director's name or whatever. It was something crazy. Fjorgi Bjorgensen, something weird. I don't
Morten Tudul. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Even try on that one.
Exciting. Exciting. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Wow, you're on fire. I wasn't sure. See, do you listen to the podcast or do you mostly participate on the Facebook group? Because I know I see you there.
I'm a little bit behind right now, but I try to keep up with it.
Oh, good. Okay.
After we do my movies, then people get to pick movies for us, right?
Yes, sir. And we'll announce that now. It's going to be TV shows adapted into movies.
Okay. Yeah, that was the leader in the poll, so it seemed like that one was going to win.
That'll be a good one. Yeah. That'll be a good one.
And I think John and I discussed this, and it's kind of extra homework, but whatever three movies get picked, I think it would be fun to also watch maybe the most popular, whatever that means, episode from that TV show.
Okay. Are we going to come to some consensus on what's considered the most popular episode, or so that we're
all... Man, I don't know. Maybe like IMDb rating, or I don't know. But yeah, we'll agree and we'll shake hands on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping, because it's been a while since we've watched a really bad movie. I'm kind of hoping that like we can sneak something in there, like Beverly Hillbillies with Jim Varney.
So. Yeah. Well, that was kind of what I was going to say. I enjoy making you guys watch bad movies because it makes it more fun for the audience, I think, but this is going to be my comeuppance here, and they'll...
Well, as long as Dream a Little Dream was never a TV show, we should be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Top Dog, the movie series.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well,
excellent.
Yeah, Mr. Kimry, well done. You know how it works. Oh. You got some great numbers here. You got some great movies, so I'm excited. Go ahead, though.
Hey, Eric, on Facebook, your name is Eric K, and
yes.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't know. I just keep people that I don't – not that there's, like, crazy stalkers or anything. I just makes it easy to just kind of avoid people that I want to avoid, I guess I would say.
So if someone wanted to find you on Facebook, they wouldn't – okay.
Yeah, exactly. So,
okay, so that's why. Because I noticed a lot of my old friends from high school, like, they have these code names.
And yeah, so it's just kind of
like, John, so you can't find them, John?
So I guess not, yeah. Like, I've never had to do that. I've never had to do that. So I guess I'm that guy who's just like, hey, you guys, what's going on? And then everybody leaves the room. So I guess
everyone changes their names.
Yeah.
I would say there's definitely – it's a twinge of that. And then also I would say the more extreme people, it's more like, you know, I don't want Big Brother knowing who I am sort of a thing. I'm not that. But I think there's some people who think, oh, nobody will know who I am if I, you know, change a couple letters in my name or whatever. But
good plan.
I think it's pretty easy to figure out. Like if people who knew you 20 years ago can figure out who you are, I think probably the government could figure it out if they had to. So.
Cool.
Well, all right. Well, I'm excited, Eric. I've only seen Life of Pi. Of the three that you picked, I've only seen one of them, so I'm excited to see some new movies.
I would say for these movies, for the listeners, if they're interested in seeing any of these movies, I would suggest they watch them before the recap. I mean, they're not like M. Night Shyamalan movies or anything where it's like, oh my god, it's going to be ruined, but I'm a big non-spoiler guy, so... you know, I would think, you know, if you have interest in any of these movies, then watch them first so that at least you're not getting things ruined for you.
Right. The two I'm familiar with, yeah, they're not like crazy, crazy things, but, you know, there are certain plot elements that you don't want to just...
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to just casually go into without seeing the movie. Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Okay, we'll be looking forward. Yep. We have 2 weeks to worry about that. Okay, go ahead and hang on the line. I think we're just about done with all the right. podcast, like, completely, right? Roy, what else do we have? We don't have to do any – we don't have to pick any of the TV movies, right?
No, we don't. We'll do a poll for that. So look for that in the next couple of days. And then also, like, there's no category for us to pick. Katie, I'm sorry, you don't get to contribute to the next category because it'll be the British Connection. So we'll have Phil Burkett and his lady Mickey on, and we'll see what movie.
Oh, I like Phil. I think he's my favorite guest.
Phil's a great guy.
Katie, so. You're my favorite guest. So.
Oh, thanks for saying that.
Okay, and so these are three movies that Phil has not seen, right?
Because we're still it's supposed to, no. I think it's Mickey, but Phil's there for, like, he's like the comfort, the support animal. He's the support, okay. Phil, because she's too nervous to come on by herself. Yeah.
No, that's perfect. Yeah. Okay, so
petted, I guess, or something.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. But so we already took care of the contact business, so I think we're done. Is this, John, the dramatic moment where the podcast just ends?
The podcast just ends. Katie, you have anything else to say?
No, this was fun. A great time.
These movies were so much fun.
It was a great time. And Katie, I know it's been a hectic month getting all this done and doing all the work for the podcast, but you know what? You've got an
You're free.
You can come back anytime, but you are also free.
You don't
ever have to do this again, but you know.
My biggest fear was that I would do the first one and that John and I would break up and I'd have to come back and do the second one.
Okay.
Yeah, it was.
But that shows my loyalty to you guys that I would have come back and done the second one. Done still.
It's amazing.
It would have been tense.
Yeah. That's that. We covered all the Cassandra conundrum. Eric, we'll be seeing you soon. Katie, yep. I'll be seeing you in real life and on Facebook and watching all these movies. And Roy, I just can't get rid of you either. So goodbye, everybody.
Saludos. That was bad.
Yeah, I was nervous, but I think she was more nervous.
Okay, she's like okay.
Because I think I told her, I'm like, okay, you're about to watch the dumbest movie you've ever seen, and you have to like it. So I think, yeah. Okay, but still, I don't know, because we didn't really talk about what these special awards are. We have, like, the most convincing Cassandra. So whoever warned the best, right? Okay.
That's best easy Warner. Enough.
The best Warner, yeah. I say Wacko Warner.